Ahead on Radio Network News, I'm John Fox. 5 American soldiers have been killed in Iraq, including 3 killed Tuesday north of Baghdad, the U.S. military said. A U.S. statement said the 3 members of the multinational division Baghdad died Tuesday afternoon in a roadside bombing, but did not give a precise location. Another soldier assigned to the 228th Brigade Combat Team died Monday of wounds suffered the day before in fighting in Anbar province west of the capital, the military said. Another soldier assigned to the 130th Engineer Brigade was killed Sunday when his vehicle was hit by a blast near Balad, the U.S. reported. At least 2,359 members of the U.S. military have died since the beginning of the war in 2003, according to the Associated Press count. The figure includes 7 military civilians. Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad confirmed Tuesday that his country had successfully produced low-grade enriched uranium at a level sufficient to power nuclear plants. Ahmadinejad said, quote, "I officially announced that Iran has joined countries with nuclear technology," unquote. He stressed that Iran's nuclear efforts are for peaceful efforts and that no country should stand in its way. He said, quote, "Our nation is a peaceful nation, and today we are interested in operating under IAEA supervision," unquote. IAEA inspectors are at the facility in Natanz, but it is unclear whether they witnessed the enrichment process. Massive street marches to protest a proposed crackdown on illegal immigration have energized U.S. Hispanics and may signal a new day of Hispanic political involvement. The demonstrations, which attracted both documented and undocumented residents across the country, mean politicians may face an angry Hispanic electorate in which Republicans would be the biggest losers, activists said on Monday. As happened in Los Angeles, the Dallas march stunned the organizers, who expected only 20,000 people in politically conservative Texas. Lydia Gonzalez-Welch, a board member with the League of United Latin American Citizens, or LULAC, which promoted the so-called mega march, said, quote, "Never in our wildest dreams did we imagine 500,000 people marching in a city that has 1.2 million people," unquote. A Spanish judge today charged 29 people over the 2004 Madrid train bombings following a 2-year investigation. The March 11 attacks, for which Islamist militants claim responsibility, killed 191 people and injured more than 1,700. 6 of the 29 men were charged with 191 counts of murder and 1,755 counts of attempted murder. The investigative judge concluded that the bombings had been carried out by an independent local cell of Islamist militants inspired but not directed by Al-Qaeda. This is News on the Horn.
The major record labels say that downloading music from the internet is stealing, stealing, stealing. But according to these people, making a mixtape for your friend is stealing too. So is making a tape of a radio show.
Home radio. We play the songs that sound more like everyone else than anyone else.
When a rock band plays an AC/DC cover at a bar that doesn't pay ASCAP, that's stealing. Or have you ever sung happy birthday to your friend at a restaurant?
Warning! Warning!
Happy birthday is copyrighted, so if you're singing in a public place, you better be paying royalties or you'll be stealing music. Does all this stuff about stealing music sound absurd? Would you rather have a world where our music culture wasn't the intellectual property of 5 corporations? Then stop giving them your money and make sure your friends and family don't either. Better yet, try burning them a CD. If we pull the plug on major labels, music gets better. Find out more about what you can do. Check out downhillbattle.org.
The embattled Iraqi Prime Minister Ibrahim al-Jafari was clinging to his political life today after a meeting of the country's governing Shia coalition failed to agree to a replacement candidate. The meeting of the United Iraqi Alliance has been widely expected to appoint a new candidate to end months of political deadlock brought on by Mr. Jafari's nomination as Prime Minister last December. The Australian Foreign Affairs Minister has admitted under oath that he might have been wrong to be, quote, relaxed, unquote, about a UN investigation into the Australian Wheat Board's role in the Iraqi kickback scandal, but says his department, quote, did a good job, unquote, despite its failure to detect the $300 million in illicit payments to Saddam Hussein's regime breaking UN sanctions. He could not, quote, specifically recall, unquote, seeing 20 cables sent to his office and the department warning that the Australian Wheat Board might have been paying kickbacks to Saddam Hussein's regime in violation of UN sanctions. Mr. Downer took the stand as the Prime Minister John Howard sent his sworn statement to the coal inquiry, which will decide today whether he will be called to give evidence tomorrow. Last night, Labour's Foreign Affairs spokesman Kevin Rudd called on Mr. Downer to resign. Quote, "Given all that's happened today, Mr. Downer should simply do the honorable thing and go," unquote. Italian Prime Minister Silvio Berlusconi has refused to concede the country's elections, despite official results showing opposition leader Romano Prodi's center-left coalition taking control of both houses. He said, quote, "There are big discrepancies, and all these discrepancies have to be looked at and checked, and I don't think that these could be called final results," unquote. This is the news on the Horn, the head-on radio network. I'm John Fox.
Now, Head On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it, so call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Hey, good evening. So it's Tuesday. I'm Bob Kincaid, you know that. And there are, if you listen to the top of the hour news there, you've got a pretty good idea of where we're probably going to be going this evening, because God knows there's a lot to talk about going on in the world today. I don't understand the nation of Iran. When you know that you're dealing with an insane person, when you know that you're dealing with somebody that wants to kill other people routinely, if you're Iran, why do you get a sharp little stick and walk up to George Bush and go poke, poke, poke like they did today? I don't know. I don't know, unless it's some sort of self-preservation measure. But before we go into any of that, I want to introduce you to someone in particular, and this is a separate issue altogether. I want to introduce you to a gentleman by the name of John McCormick. He's with us on the phone here in a moment. And he's trying to make a difference in the world by virtue of getting enacted laws that will enable people to sit in on medical board proceedings after doctors have made horrible, horrible mistakes. Most people don't realize that isn't possible in many, many states right now. Let's get Mr. McCormick on with us. Are you there, John? Well, you will be in a second. Sorry. There you are. John, are you with us?
Yes, sir. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Thank you for talking with us this evening.
You're welcome.
Now, just as a little bit of background, you come to this issue that you're working on. Taylor's Law is named after your daughter, who is no longer with us, correct?
That's correct, sir.
And that being the case, tell us a little bit about the background of your story so we can know what motivates you.
Okay, my daughter was born with hydrocephalus, which is water in the brain, so she had a shunt, which is a straw-like instrument that relieves the pressure of the brain, and the fluid comes through the tube down into the stomach and dissolves in the bloodstream.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the noodle was blocked when I brought her in on a sad day, which was...
John, could I interrupt you for a moment?
Mm-hmm.
We're having a terrible connection here.
Mm-hmm.
Are you on a cell phone or something?
No, I'm not.
We've got some sort of interference. Could you just try back very quickly the same number, and perhaps we'll get a better connection? It's like there's a short or something in the line, and I want to make sure that people hear your story.
Okay, I'll call you right back.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye now. That's, I didn't want you to have to, I hope we get a better connection. Mr. McCormick's story is a tragic one, beyond any shadow of a doubt. his daughter was 13 months old, as he was telling you. She was born hydrocephalic, and they put what's called a shunt in her brain, and that permitted the fluid to drain away. Let's see if we've got a better connection with Mr. McCormick now. Are you with us again, John?
Yes, Bob. Is that you?
Yes.
Is that better?
Much better, I hope.
Okay.
If you could pick up where you left off, you mentioned that she was born hydrocephalic and that they had installed a shunt to drain the fluid away from her brain. She was succeeding with that therapy, was she not?
That's correct. No, this is a very common procedure. You're not supposed to die from it.
Mm-hmm.
We brought her in on a Saturday night, which was like September 30th, and they knew the shunt was blocked, and they told us that she had had immediate surgery, but one thing led to another. They couldn't find the senior surgeon, and the chief resident wasn't there, and they left the junior resident in charge to call the shots. By the way, at midnight that night, his license expired, if you can believe that.
Oh, for heaven's sakes.
And, they said that there was no operating rooms available, and the operating rooms were busy, which... I found later that wasn't true.
John, this sounds like you must have been out at some sort of podunk hospital out in the middle of the country. Is that the case?
That's not the case. I was supposedly in the best hospital in the world for children.
Well, what hospital was that?
That was Children's Hospital in Boston.
Oh, my. So so they told you there were no operating rooms available. There was no one on staff when there were people supposed to be on staff. And so, this was obviously a life-threatening situation, right?
That's correct. And, you know, they put her up on a floor, which, in my opinion, she wasn't properly monitored. And they knew her shunt was blocked and throughout the whole night. You know, the pressure was mounting. And I had to go home and take care of my two boys. My wife was with my daughter. But I got a tragic call at 6:10 in the morning that my daughter coded.
Oh, my God. Had they done the surgery?
No, they did. They delayed the surgery because they couldn't find the senior surgeon. He was responsible to make the call, and nobody could find him. I later found out that in a letter that he put his page on vibrate, went into a grocery store, then he went home, fell asleep, and then never answered any of his pages.
Oh, my God. When was this?
This happened... Well, roughly about 5 years ago. It happened September 30th in 2000.
And at 13 months of age, your daughter Taylor passed away.
Yeah, she was in a coma for a week on a life respirator, and I still held out faith, and we had meetings and stuff like that. And you know, when I took her off the respirator, she fought for 3.5 hours, and I was holding her, and she was turning blue and trying to breathe. And,
oh, God.
And she died like 3.5 hours later on October 6th.
Now, after that happened, the story doesn't end there. It took a while for you to find out some of the things that you've just mentioned. For instance, that the surgeon put his pager on vibrate and then fell asleep and just ignored you.
That's correct. After she died, I promised my daughter, I carried her down to the morgue myself, and I apologized to her for not protecting her better, which a parent should. I was walking almost step by step, like a slow walk down there, and I don't wish that on my worst enemy, taking their own child to the morgue. But I made a promise to her that I was going to make changes, and one of the first things I did is I filed a complaint with the Board of Registration of Medicine, which at the time, that's the only thing that you could do.
Mm-hmm. Did you contact a lawyer?
Yes, I did. That was like during the process. But my attorney, we didn't have any rights to be on the board at the board hearing, whereas you just file a complaint with the Board of Registration of Medicine.
Mm-hmm.
And then the only thing that you get back, you get back the doctor's response, and then that's it. Then you're totally left out of the system, you're shut out of the system.
What kind of information were you hoping to present information to the Board of Registration?
Yes, I wanted to tell them a family impact, what what they did to my family, how it impacted me, how it impacted my wife, how it impacted my two boys at the time, which were 4 and 7. You know, and it impacted them very much. You know, my four-year-old, I remember he was there when my daughter was in a coma, and they grew up quick that day. That, you know, the priest was telling me when he was in the waiting area that he was playing with his toys, but he had tears coming down his eyes. Mm. And I just want to let them know that my daughter wasn't a statistic, she wasn't a file number, and she was a human being, and she should be treated with respect.
What happened to the doctor, John?
What happened to the
neurosurgeon as a result of this review board?
Oh, believe it or not, and that's the reason why I fought so hard. They only got a slap on the wrist. He got a letter of warning, and the other two got no. He got a letter of reprimand, and the other two got a letter of warning, which to me wasn't tough enough.
And at no point in the process did the Board of Registration of Medicine have any interest in hearing from you, from your family, to know anything that had happened to you, how this impacted your life. They just didn't care.
At the time, that's not what I honestly believe, because, you know, you only go by a written statement. So how much do they read in a written statement? In my opinion, they just proofread it, and they just toss it aside.
Sure.
Yeah.
So you didn't, I mean, but you didn't leave this go. You have fought on in Taylor's name. You've gotten some legislation passed there in your home state of Massachusetts, is that correct?
Yes, I did. No, after they told me about the finding, which they told me like 2 weeks after they had the hearing, and, you know, I was very disgusted with the outcome, and I just want to know why that my family wasn't able to attend the hearing. That, you know, I went to my state senator and my state representative, and I told them that this law has to change. You know, you can't be treating people like this. And that's my own flesh and blood, and it's common sense. You know, that's my own child there, so why can't I be there to represent my own child? I was totally shut out of the system. And still to this day, I didn't know who represented my daughter, because they had somebody from the board represent my daughter. Until this day, I don't even know the name or what kind of qualifications, and even if they did represent my daughter, because they work for the Board of Registration of Medicine, which, in my opinion, I thought was tainted, because they're going after the physicians, and they're on the board, and their fellow physicians, and their attorneys are in there for 6 hours.
Yeah, it sounds like the fix is in, doesn't it?
Sounds like a kangaroo court. Exactly right.
Yeah, and this is certainly not limited to Massachusetts. It happens all over the country this way in many instances, doesn't it?
I believe it does, and that's why I'm speaking out, and I want other states, hopefully, if your fellow West Virginians there can, you know, talk to the state senators and the state representatives, and because I certainly don't want nobody to live in hell that I'm living through, and everybody has due process and fairness, in my opinion, and everybody has a voice, and I'm trying to give people a voice, because no, I live in hell every day, and I certainly don't want you or your loved ones to go what I'm going through.
No, not anyone. You said, you know, you wouldn't wish it on your worst enemy. Well, what? How is your battle proceeding, John?
Well, I have it passed in Massachusetts, and currently, it's sponsored in Georgia,
mm-hmm.
and it died out in the session this year. So hopefully, by next year, that they'll introduce it back in the Georgia legislature, but they're really pushing it hard down in Georgia. And if I have to, like I said, I promised my daughter when I took her down the morgue that I was going to make changes. And I want to try to pass it in every state until the day I die. And I just want to pass it like Amber's Alert and Megan's Law throughout the whole country. And like I said, you know, most importantly, you know, this is for like single home mothers, you know, people that are poor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this doesn't discriminate. I want people to have a voice, and you know, the elderly. So some people get very disgruntled with the system. They get shut out of the system, and
right.
And I want to change all that, so it's a due process and fairness for everybody.
Well, obviously, the doctor's lobby is a very, very powerful, potent, strong group. Are you meeting resistance from physicians on this?
At the time in Massachusetts, you know, when I first started, everybody thought I was like, you're going up, like you said, against a strong lobby, but I spoke to the heart. I spoke the truth, and I was very positive. If I put an analogy like a boxer, they might come and knock me down for a round, but I want to come back up swinging. I did everything in my power. I went up to the state house for a day and lobbied all day, passing out pamphlets. And like I said, my daughter wasn't a Democrat or Republican.
No, she's just a baby in your arms.
Mailbox. I bought my own signs and I put it on my truck. And I held out signs in front of the state house. And my I treat people like I want to be treated.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a message. You know, if they wanted to read the message, that's fine. If they want to ask a question, no, I answer the question. But I left people alone, but I just stood out there and let people read it for themselves.
Well, let me ask you this. Is there a website that people can go to?
Yes, sir. I have a website. It's www.memorial2taylor.com. That's all one word.
Mm-hmm. And so if they want to contact their various state legislators, they can do so. Or are other people coming out and telling you their stories related to this kind of thing, John?
Yes, sir. Like in their different states, like in Pennsylvania, and I met a fellow. I talked to a fellow a couple weeks ago. And the same thing happened to him. You know, the doctors only got warnings for like misdiagnosed his wife that had breast cancer.
Well, this is, you know, there's a saying out there, John, that doctors are the only profession that gets to bury their mistakes. Hopefully, with laws like Taylor's Law, we'll stop some of that. Are you traveling in support of this, or are you just trying to work it from your home there in Massachusetts? How are you going about this?
Believe it or not, I use the Internet, and the Internet's a powerful tool that reaches out to millions and millions of people. I make phone calls. I've been to Washington and back and spoke to my federal senators down there, Senator Kerry and Senator Kennedy's office, my Congressman Bill Delahunt's office, and I spoke to various people down there. And you know, I speak from the heart, and like I said, I just want to make sure that this never happens, especially to another child, another family ever again.
Let me ask you, just so people can get a little bit better handle on things, perhaps. You mentioned your two sons. You mentioned your wife. How how they grew up in a hurry that night, your sons. How has it all affected them over the years?
It's hard, you know, especially, you know, they see me, you know, like especially when it's her birthday, and you see kids that growing up that, you know, she should have been in the first grade this year, and you see kids getting on the school bus. And my son Steven, he's nine now. You know, he always talks about missing her, and I remember that day when he was in kindergarten. You know, when I brought him off the bus, and he told me that he had a great idea. He wanted to put a Band-Aid, climb up to heaven on a ladder, put a Band-Aid on Taylor's head, and bring her home.
Oh God!
And you know, my oldest son keeps on asking me why the doctors did this, and I honestly don't have a answer for him. I just said, "Do we just gotta?" Granted, there's great doctors out there,
mm-hmm.
but we just, in my opinion, we just got a physician that just didn't care. He just treated my daughter like a statistic.
And Taylor's story's been covered in a couple of books too, hasn't it?
That's correct. There's two books that, you know, if the audience interested in reading, one's called The Wall of Silence by Rosemary Gibson. She lives in Virginia, by the way. That's a good book, The Wall of Silence.
Mm-hmm.
The other book is The Patient's Guide to Reduce Medical Errors, and that's by Karen Janine Bernstein. And you don't have to take my word for it. Both these ladies, the latter one work is a nurse. Both these ladies work in the healthcare industry. And then I didn't certainly ask. I didn't know what medical errors was, and I kept on reading a lot of information. A lot of people would be shocked. Like, medical errors is like the third leading cause of death in our country.
You have a greater risk of dying from a doctor's negligence in this country than you do of dying from a gunshot wound.
That's exactly. It leads to motor vehicle, AIDS, and breast cancer death. And I want people to be aware of that and learn from my mistake. No, go by your heart. If you have questions, you know, ask the senior surgeon. If you have the resident there or chief resident there, speak up. learn from my mistake and protect your loved ones.
I appreciate you're so right, John, and I hate it that you call it your mistake, because I know that you were being the best father that you knew how to be on that evening. But when fear grips you, you look to those people who are supposed to have had the years of education and training, and you're supposed to be able to know that you're dealing with competent individuals. It sounds to me like the whole system fell apart that night you took Taylor in.
Yeah, it was like a domino effect. It was like one thing after another.
And among other things, they told you there was no operating room available. The operating room was wide open the whole time, wasn't it?
Yeah, and we found that out later down the road, and you know, in house they keep everything in house, those peer reviews. But once you go through the system and do depositions, etc., then you know, you finally find out the truth, which takes a couple of years, and that's all I wanted was the truth. I wanted an apology.
Have you ever gotten an apology?
I got a half-hearted apology. That's about it. But to me, it wasn't sincere enough. For example, they promised they would make changes after my daughter's death about supervision and monitoring of patients.
Mm-hmm.
And then 4 to 5 months down the road, they had the same circumstances. Like four or five other children died to the same kind of instances of supervision or monitoring of patients. And to me, that's a slap in the face.
Yeah, more children died?
That's correct. It was different circumstances, but there was other children that died. But this is due to monitoring and supervision of patients.
Dear God, dear God. John, I wish you the absolute best in your struggle, in your fight. This is a fight worth taking to the country. And again, your website, www.memorial2taylor.com. Folks can come there and learn all about the issue.
Mm-hmm. They can learn about the issue. I have there's the books on there, the links for the books. There's a link about Taylor's Law. There's an article called Fatal Mistakes from the AARP magazine. And I have links for different stories about my activism in Washington. And then I'm certainly willing to help people there in Virginia if they want to get a law passed there. They can just, my email is right on there too, patientsrights2000@yahoo.com. Well, if they have any questions or if they need any help, I'll be glad to assist them to get a law passed there in West Virginia and Virginia.
Wonderful. And of course, we've got an audience that runs the world over, so anyone, anywhere, you're reaching out to them, right?
That's correct. If they need me, I'll be there.
All right. John McCormick, thank you so very much, and our thoughts and prayers are with you, and our very best in your continued fight.
Thank you, and I personally want to thank you for letting me have a couple minutes of your time, and I really appreciate it, and hopefully you can spread the word for me.
We will do absolutely that, John. Thank you very kindly, and have a wonderful evening, and although I that feels terribly hollow. I don't know what to say to someone who has been in the hell that you've been in, but know that we're thinking of you.
I appreciate it, and I think I came to grips with it now, because I think God took her for a reason to make this world a better place, and that's what I honestly feel now, that I guess he picked me to pick the fight to help make this world a better place for everybody.
Well, thank you, John. And the best, and our very best to you.
All right, thank you. Have a great night.
You too.
Okay,
goodbye.
Bye.
John McCormick, the website, www.memorial2taylor.com. And bear in mind, this is not necessarily a children's issue. It was his 13-month-old daughter who passed away as a result of incompetence and negligence of a monumental proportion. But this happens, as he noted, he spoke with a gentleman in Pennsylvania for whom incompetence and medical negligence had led to the death of his wife from misdiagnosed breast cancer. It happens every day in the United States, and almost every state is the same stone wall that John McCormick found himself going up against in Massachusetts. If you file a medical board complaint, you have no right. to be at the proceedings to represent yourself or your loved ones. Your lawyer, get that, your lawyer can't even be in there. Does that just blow your mind? And a bunch of doctors sit down, we will issue a letter of reprimand to Dr. Schmo and tell him not to do that anymore. These people were lied to, and their baby died. And it happens every blessed day. Now, Agnes isn't with us this evening so until baseball practice is over, so I'll just be doing what I'm doing now, and that is punching a button and putting a caller on hold until I can get to it. I tell you what, let's take a quick break, and when we come back, we can talk about this. There are a load of other issues. You know, honestly, though, we stay head up, as the saying goes, about a lot of things, but we forget the little hateful things that have happened since George Bush has been in office. You remember that line about the more of our doctors are getting out of doctoring because they can't practice their love on the women of America? You remember that stupid crap? Sure. Well, see, it's the John McCormicks of the world that George Bush thinks, if they file a medical malpractice claim, they've won life's lottery. That's how detached that evil thing is from the rest of us who are, in fact, America. Okay? That's where it is. Maybe we should talk about this a little bit tonight. And we got a lot of other things to talk about, too. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid. It was time for me to have my X-rays. Cause I had many nightmares. But the fatal day, the room was dark and the skeleton was floating on the wall.
Fight childhood asthma, then fight it with a scrub brush and a hot soapy towel. Even in the neatest and tidiest homes, if there's so much as a crumb to eat or a drop to drink, household pests like bugs and mice will do all that they can to get it. Creepy crawlies like bugs and mice are unpleasant enough as it is, but they're more than just a nuisance for kids with asthma because they can actually trigger an asthma attack. So, give them a whole lot of nothing. Sweep up crumbs, wipe down tables, scrub dishes before they pile up in the sink, and store leftovers in plastic bags or bowls. Don't leave them so much as one tidbit or nibble, and you can stop a childhood asthma attack before it starts. Discover other simple ways to prevent an asthma attack. Call 1-866-NO-ATTACKS or visit noattacks.org, because no child should feel like a fish out of water. A public service message brought to you by the U.S. EPA, the Ad Council, and this station.
Treat me with understanding.
Treat me with respect.
Drug and alcohol addiction is an equal opportunity disease.
Treat me without judgment.
Individuals in recovery come from all walks of life and deserve to be treated with respect for winning one of the hardest battles there is.
Treat me with courtesy.
Treat me with humanity.
Alcohol and drug addiction deserves proper treatment. For drug and alcohol information and treatment referral, call 1-800-662-HELP.
Dad, can I ask you something?
Sure.
There's this girl I kind of like.
Say no more.
You just have to impress her. Okay, but how?
Just, I don't know, pick up a lot of heavy things around her.
Like what?
You know, desks, chairs, people. Grunt if you have to.
Grunt?
Yeah, be like, There you go.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. When you adopt a child from foster care, just being there makes all the difference. To learn more, call 1-888-200-4005. A public service announcement brought to you by Adopt U.S. Kids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
Hi, I'm Joanne Woodward. Ever notice how many things in life happen in a circle? The seasons, revolving credit, hula hoops, the spinning of the circle we call Earth, and recycling. Together, we've already made a difference. Sorting glass, plastic, separating cans, stacking newspapers. Now there are lots of products made from things we've already recycled. A paperclip, in a more daring life, a 56 convertible, a cereal box, once your Sunday paper. It all goes back to the circle. It starts when we recycle trash at home and at work. It's completed when we buy products made from recycled materials. How do you know the difference? Check the label for something called post-consumer recycled content. Then buy the highest percentage of it you can find. You'll save a tree, you'll save energy, and in your own way, you'll help save the world. Complete the circle.
For your free Buy Recycled shopping guide, call 1-800-2-RECYCLE. A message from the Ad Council and Environmental Defense. Finding the ways that work.
Forgive me. But you know what? That Crash Test Dummies was one of the smartest lyrics that you're ever going to run across. And, you know, I'd love to live the situation that's described in that tune. You know, just sit down on a blanket with a picnic with God and ask a few questions. Because you know what? When you hear John McCormick's story, you kind of want to look at God and go, you know, you got a lot of explaining to do. He has made his peace, John McCormick has. But how many others have not? How many others wait and wonder and worry and fear? And yeah, I do. I lay this at the doorstep of the Bush administration. Because the Bush administration thinks people who are hurt by doctors are somehow, go figure, God knows, that they're the bad people in this. Not the guy, not the doctor, not the multimillionaire who kills an innocent individual who just wanted to be made better, not made dead. But the people who call him to account are somehow the people who are in the wrong. I can't get my head around it. It makes my head hurt. So, you know, forgive me, but yeah, this, not just George Bush. Oh, hell no. No, it's the people that vote for him, too. You know, we've got, here in West Virginia, a couple of years ago, doctors up in Wheeling went on strike because they said they were being forced out of business by the big, bad, nasty plaintiffs. And they want, among other things, they wanted to create this one of these review boards that would look and see if you had merit to your case after the doctor butchered you or killed your loved one. And, of course, medical negligence continues to go up. But the insurance companies, well, you know, it's the insurance companies duping the doctors. And the insurance companies, it's a big fraud. You know, and maybe that's the central theme. Maybe that is what is emerging from all of this, because every time I scratch some Republican policy and dig just a little bit of the filth and the pond scum and the garbage off of it, well, I find a fraud. I find a fraud. A Republican is incapable of doing anything honest. Everything they do goes back to benefiting some special interest, some group that has paid them well. You know, from time to time on some of the shows on Head On Radio Network, you'll hear ads by Rama over at Grayson Rama. He runs a lot of the Billionaires for Bush ads. Billionairesforbush.com. And when you hear those things, you understand. Yeah, we are talking about government bought and paid for. Let's go to the phones and find out who I've got. Hey, you're Head On.
Well, Bob, it's David.
Well, hey, David, how's it going?
It's going quite well, and I'm loving this topic because, well, there's a couple of things. One real close to the topic and one a little far afield, so let's get the close one out of the way first so that the callers don't think I'm crazy. Okay. Crazier. Today, there's a case bubbling up through the court system, and it's not going to go away because there is ample testimony from the other side, not the woman that's suing, that says what she is alleging is actually the case. And the case is this nice lady is suing HCA. Boy, I know a little bit about that.
Yeah, all that. Well, there's some dude that kills cats that runs that outfit, doesn't he?
Right. Well, one of his for profit.
What was it? Would that be for profit?
I think it's for profit hospitals in Wichita has not argued with the fact that they purposefully pushed registered nurses out of their employ to use part-timers, not registered nurses, anybody with a pulse. And this woman has what she believes and some very solid lawyers and other skilled doctors say is a great case to say that had there been registered nurses in place, rather than who the heck it ever was, the woman's husband would not have died in his bed.
So
it's not just in Boston. It's not just the doctor that can't be bothered.
And it's not just children.
No, it's not just children. You know, you get to the point where, gee whiz, you know, Wall Street expects us to be returning 81 cents a share on this HCA, and my gosh, we're down to 76. If we get rid of those darn registered nurses that cost so much across the nation, gee willikers, you know, we could maybe beat the 81, go to 83, and reap a big old stock bonus and have a second beach house.
I don't like them, David.
No, I don't like them either. Now then, for the one that's a little further afield, and this one may drop like a lead balloon. At various levels of government, somebody has decided, this apparently for this fellow in Massachusetts was at state level, that a member of the family or a member of the family's council cannot be part of this process. And I'm sure at some point somebody's going to say, well, we can't have this bereaved individual out of his mind over the loss of his daughter that's completely irrational about this. We can't have this guy mucking up the works when this is just, you know, that 0.25% of bad outcomes that we have. If he gets involved with this, oh my gracious, it will skew the outcome into an unnecessarily abusive spot for those that do a good job. Is that a possibility?
Oh, it's exactly what it is, David. I mean, you know, we don't want those people in our hearing. I mean, we've got, you know, Dr. Flinchensnarker is a fine, fine fellow. I've played golf and tennis with him on many, many occasions. And
Dr. Flipnoodle would never do anything like that.
Well, heavens no.
Heavens no, yeah. Harken back to the movie Malice. What was it? Absence of Malice.
Yeah.
That was a nice little movie. That'll give you confidence in doctors. All right, now then. Here's the big leap. It's a wide, wide canyon. The federal government has the one and only individual that has any potential genuine responsibility for 9/11 on trial, and they want a death penalty for that guy, and the federal government is in the third day of what I believe is badgering and opening wounds and treating people like ratings buttons.
Yeah.
To come out, and I'm sorry, that poor guy sitting there in his orange jumpsuit and his little white cap, I don't believe is mentally fit to be on trial at all, let alone be executed, and the federal government to ramp it up so they can kill him and prove to America that they're getting something done. They're now in the third day
of please let us kill him stuff. Yeah.
Exactly.
And interestingly enough, this ties in with what John McCormick was talking about. Why, you know, what are they doing in this phase of the trial? They are telling the jury, David, the impact that it had, that 9/11 had on ordinary individuals. They've had weeping widows in there. And God, yeah, their wounds have been reopened. And, you know, here, honey, let me pour some salt on that.
That's exactly why I called, because they are being just, oh, talk about, well, what's the word? It's where you take advantage of somebody, and they're exploited for the purpose of the government to do that. And those people may have progressed to some level of closure. And I'm not real crazy about that word, but it's appropriate. They may have progressed to a point that they're going to regress now because they're asked to do all this, hear all this, say all this all over again, and it's only to prop up a mouth, just the most horrible oops, I don't want to say that word. It's the most difficult thing to prove that the federal government is doing a great thing by killing that man, and they're striving for it so hard. Fine. He had something to do with the case. Let him rot in prison for the rest of his natural life.
Absolutely. And you might get, I mean, if there's any viable information to be gotten out of this clown, you might get it out of him somewhere down the road.
If he sits in a cell and reads his Quran and just comes around, he may come through this, or maybe some treatment. Maybe there could be something to be learned from someone that's like that. To kill him is useless, and it's stupid, and it's only propping up the reputation.
Well, that was kind of the
horrible government.
That was kind of the theory I had going for me, David, with the execution of Timothy McVeigh. You know, Timothy McVeigh was evil. He was the worst that America had to offer. He had his head and his psyche completely exploded, torn apart, shredded, broken by George Bush the First's Gulf War I. And he came back and decided he was going to do him some homegrown terrorism. And I knew a man
very much like that, and to do away with Timothy McVeigh before we could have 20 years of him saying whatever he wanted to say, we threw away a window into really knowing how to prevent that man and those that came after him from doing it again.
Yeah, exactly. So, but, you know, they've got it. But see, the Bush administration doesn't think like that, David. They think that the American people are strictly retributive, and that consequently they got to kill somebody for 9/11 because they haven't caught anybody. They can't catch anybody. And frankly, you know, I'm not running down the Jeff Rentz garden path or going to do the George Norrie thing and say that 9/11 was caused by spacemen or anything, but I don't know what happened. We know for a fact that we were not given the straight dope on 9/11.
No, we were not, and those behind the Bush family curtain are not going to let anybody catch Osama. That's never, ever, ever going to happen.
Oh, no, I'm thinking that might happen before the 2006 congressional elections.
Well, either that or a body double.
Yeah, but what I'm getting at here is they got to have somebody to hold up. Now, if the top of the hour news, John Fox reporting, noted the charges that have been levied against a bunch of individuals for the 3/11 train bombing in Madrid.
Yeah.
You know, hundreds and hundreds of counts of murder and thousands of counts of attempted murder.
Yep.
And remember, that was one of those, remember what all the right-wing freaks called the Spaniards after they pulled out of Iraq? Oh, they're sissies. They're a bunch of socialists. They're halfway to being a communist. Well, they're also catching the people who attacked them, which is more than can be said for these bunch of saber-rattling bozos that happen to be in charge of our government right now.
Without the addition of a single statute, law, whatever it is called, they are doing it within the legal system that existed 5, 8, 10 years ago in Spain. There is no Homeland Security in Spain.
No Patriot Act.
I'm sorry?
No Patriot Act.
No. None of that. They're operating within the laws of their land in a coordinated, intelligent, this branch talks to that branch, and they all get together with a third branch over tapas and sangria, you know, 4 in the afternoon, then take a nap, wake up, and get something else done before dinner at 10. We don't understand.
No, we don't. And do you remember though, back where, you know, the wing nuts and the neocons or whatever the hell we're calling them this week, they said, you see,
fascist. How about that?
Yeah, fascist works. Oh God. But remember when they said, you know, you sissy Democrats, you want to treat this like it's a law enforcement thing when we actually know that what we need to do is bomb the snot out of some peasants. We're the smart people here.
It's a perfect description. Oh, and besides, in addition to being the smart people, we are creating history. No, never mind what you think history is. We'll tell you about it after we do it.
Yeah.
Oh, golly.
Yeah, they're creating some history.
They sure are.
I don't know. Maybe I'll go the Walt Disney route and have my head frozen or something and come back like something out of Futurama and I'd just be, you know, Bob Kincaid's head. And I just want somebody to hold up the history books, you know, to the chapter on George Bush where it says, biggest, most ignorant son of a bitch that ever lived, you know, in the American Republic. Because that is what history will write about him.
He will have, you know, he's got the poor guy's fighting right now for a legacy. Oh, Lordy. That man's legacy.
That man's not fighting for a legacy. That man's fighting for 40% approval.
Well, he ain't going to get there because he hadn't bottomed out yet. You know, he's supposed to be a reformed alcoholic. He's supposed to understand the bottoming thing. All those friends of Bill are supposed to have told him about that stuff. He ain't bottomed out yet. He's got a ways to go.
Oh, no, yeah. I mean, it's a little while yet before he winds up with a bottle of 7-Up and a Mad Dog 2020 with the screw top off under the bridge with the boys. But he's headed that way.
Oh, yes, but in the mornings that should be a big old sun drop because you need that little caffeine bump in addition to stopping the shake.
you got to get rid of those gin yips. I understand you're giving yourself away there, David.
I read a lot. Especially Bukowski.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I walked past the Mad Dog 2020 in the little convenience store the other day and just, you know, gave me the blind shutters walking by it.
Well, I tell you what, I'll confess, there's been one more than one interesting evening crafted on a short dog out west. Squirt's got caffeine in it.
Yeah, Squirt. Yeah, that's a blast, too.
Yep. With a short dog and a squirt, you can get out of a convenience mart back in those days with one of each of those for $3. You could get a leg up to the point where you could have a gift gab, such as you could talk yourself into some kind of other trouble.
Next thing you know, just wandering around behind little animals, like Jim Stafford used to say. David, thanks so much, man.
Oh, Bob, it's always a pleasure. Thanks for the chance to rant.
No, I appreciate it. Bye now.
See you later.
And let's see, where do we go from here? All right, line one. Hey, you're head on. Who have I got?
Hey, Gonzo, greetings. Bob, how are you?
Hey, Spike, what's happening?
Hey, not much. Calling about the subject of depleted uranium, a little off the subject of what everyone's talking
about.
That's
okay. You know, I'm proud of the fact that this is conversation radio, and you can bring to the table what you got.
I earlier in the day, I did email some information about this guy to you.
Yeah, I saw it.
Doug Rock, R-O-K-K-E, for anyone out there, you want to Google this. This is unbelievable what I saw today at this presentation. He's a former combat officer with the Army, a PhD, leading expert on depleted uranium. He's even talked before British Parliament, United Nations. What we use, especially in our heavy artillery with the tanks and all, has small amounts of uranium on them. This way they explode further, and they, you know, the bunker busters, all this stuff. What I can't believe is, until I start today, is how damaging we're there's going to be a huge health risk to everyone that is serving in this war right now, and any war, really, where we've used this. And you're supposed to wear your chemical suits and everything within 50 meters of this, and he even showed us a video from some scientists from Japan that were over there in Baghdad, and I mean, the amount of depleted uranium that we're leaving all over Baghdad is ridiculous, including the Palestine Hotel. We shot up with depleted uranium that where the press was.
Yeah, that's where we butchered some of those pesky little reporters, isn't it?
Yeah, and we used depleted uranium to do that. And it's funny because our troops are fighting, you know, around all this stuff going off. They're not wearing chemical suits. I even talked that there was a Marine veteran who's now wheelchair bound that was there to listen to it, and I spoke to him afterwards because I was working on writing a story about this speaking engagement he had today. And the guy, the former Marine, laughed and said, you know, these chemical suits are a joke. If you're in the heat of battle, you can't wear your gas mask because you can't then fire your rifle. So essentially, the government is knowingly putting, you know, almost a la Agent Orange with depleted uranium troops at risk, and probably even worse than Agent Orange in a way. I mean, it's uranium.
Yeah.
This is radioactive material. They're just, you know, nonchalantly letting all these troops fight around unprotected, and especially all these National Guardsmen who aren't even lifers in the military that are being...
Oh, right, and they get to go home and have flipper babies.
Exactly. And this is a guy I really wish, after seeing him today, could get more attention. I mean, he's not just any crackpot. I mean, he was assigned to work with Scott Ritter on depleted uranium stuff in the mid-90s, And of course, you know, Scott Ritter, another person the government at one time tried to smear when he came out with actual facts, which is a very common policy, it seems, with the government. You know, just like this guy had an eye surgery for something military-related, he had to pay for it out of his own pocket because the government wouldn't pay for it because he's been criticizing the government for what they're doing with depleted uranium. It's nauseating, Bob, just to see what they'll do. Yeah, and then not only that, he even told us the company in Oklahoma that was making a lot of these shells had to shut down because the majority of the people that were working there were getting things like leukemia. It's ridiculous what these warmongers are doing in putting anyone in a dangerous risk for their own little...
Oh, yeah, and you know, I don't necessarily know who the companies are, but it, you know, it's the same thing, whether it's depleted uranium, asbestos, all that stuff. You know, they never build it next to their mansion.
Oh, no, of course not. And by the way, he also mentioned to us another fact that when we went in the first Gulf War and used depleted uranium and shot up Kuwait with that, guess who got the no-bid contract to clean it up?
Oh, I can only guess Halliburton.
There you go. That's the million-dollar question. You are a winner. Hopefully you take IOUs. But, yeah, once again, and that was when Dick Cheney, by the way, was in charge.
And, of course, they make a damn fortune doing it, Spike. But, you know, also along the way, they hire poor people from, you know, South Asia to come in and actually do the dirty work.
Exactly. This way, it's more people who have no voice that'll die a slow and painful death and have no one to speak for them on their behalf. But like I said, after seeing this presentation today, it was just, I knew a little bit about it going up to this. I didn't realize just how heavily we're using. I mean, essentially, we are dropping a nuclear bomb in the Middle East already, you know, just in small doses.
Oh, yeah, and, you know, small enough that we can get around it with the right kind of technology and things like that. But, you know, if we can ultimately depopulate the region in 100 years or so, more is the better. Hey, Spike, we got to roll on out of here. I'm going to try to get that guy on the show.
Yeah, your audience will love hearing this. This guy's a great speaker. He has documents like you couldn't imagine. I mean, every document imaginable he had with him to back up what he was saying. So, I mean, this guy is loaded with facts and information, and he's very entertaining, too.
Okay. Well, so. I will go there. I'll make contact. And what's the website again?
The website, I'm trying to think off the top of my head, I believe was traprockpeace.org, TRAPROCKPEACE.
Yeah, traprockpeace.org.
I believe that is the website for the group that he works with a lot, based out of Massachusetts. But that, like I said, if they just Google his name, Doug, R-O-K-K-E, the articles from that website actually will come right up with the Google search. This guy really just hasn't gotten much attention yet. And if there's anyone who should be on every talk show and news show imaginable, it's this guy, what he's talking about right now. This is a huge crisis, and the real quick before I go, the Marine in the wheelchair summed it up best. He said, you know, the government doesn't take care of the vets. They really don't care about the vets. They don't educate the troops about what they're around. You know, the less they know, the better, apparently. And
no, get the shell, stick it in the breech, close the breech, shoot the gun.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right, the Spike, thank you so very kindly.
No problem.
Look forward to talking to you again.
All right, thank you.
Bye now. That's our buddy Spike from Easton, PA. News is next. This is Head On.
Head On Radio Network News, I'm John Fox. Five American soldiers have been killed in Iraq, including three killed Tuesday north of Baghdad, the U.S. military said. A U.S. statement said the three members of the multinational division Baghdad died Tuesday afternoon in a roadside bombing, but did not give a precise location. Another soldier assigned to the 228th Brigade Combat Team died Monday of wounds suffered the day before in fighting in Anbar province west of the capital, the military said. Another soldier assigned to the 130th Engineer Brigade was killed Sunday when his vehicle was hit by a blast near Balad, the U.S. reported. At least 2,359 members of the U.S. military have died since the beginning of the war in 2003, according to the Associated Press count. The figure includes seven military civilians. Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad confirmed Tuesday that his country had successfully produced low-grade enriched uranium at a level sufficient to power nuclear plants. Ahmadinejad said, quote, "I officially announced that Iran has joined countries with nuclear technology," unquote. He stressed that Iran's nuclear efforts are for peaceful efforts and that no country should stand in its way. He said, quote, "Our nation is a peaceful nation. And today we are interested in operating under IAEA supervision," unquote. IAEA inspectors are at the facility in the Nance, but it is unclear whether they witnessed the enrichment process. Massive street marches to protest a proposed crackdown on illegal immigration have energized U.S. Hispanics and may signal a new day of Hispanic political involvement. The demonstrations, which attracted both documented and undocumented residents across the country, mean politicians may face an angry Hispanic electorate in which Republicans would be the biggest losers, activists said on Monday. As happened in Los Angeles, the Dallas March stunned the organizers, who expected only 20,000 people in politically conservative Texas. Lydia Gonzalez-Welch, a board member with the League of United Latin American Citizens, or LULAC, which promoted the so-called mega march, said, quote, "Never in our wildest dreams did we imagine 500,000 people marching in a city that has 1.2 million people," unquote. A Spanish judge today charged 29 people over the 2004 Madrid train bombings following a two-year investigation. The March 11 attacks, for which Islamist militants claim responsibility, killed 191 people and injured more than 1,700. Six of the 29 men were charged with 191 counts of murder and 1,755 counts of attempted murder. The investigative judge concluded that the bombings had been carried out by an independent local cell of Islamist militants inspired but not directed by Al-Qaeda. This is News on the Horn.
The major record labels say that downloading music from the internet is stealing, stealing, stealing. But according to these people, making a mixtape for your friend is stealing too. So is making a tape of a radio show.
We play the songs that sound more like everyone else than anyone else.
When a rock band plays an AC/DC cover at a bar that doesn't pay ASCAP, that's stealing. Or have you ever sung Happy Birthday to your friend at a restaurant?
Warning! Warning!
Happy Birthday is copyrighted, so if you're singing in a public place, you'd better be paying royalties, or you'll be stealing music. Does all this stuff about stealing music sound absurd? Would you rather have a world where our music culture wasn't the intellectual property of five corporations? Then stop giving them your money, and make sure your friends and family don't either. Better yet, try burning them a CD. If we pull the plug on major labels, music gets better. Find out more about what you can do. Check out downhillbattle.org.
The embattled Iraqi Prime Minister Ibrahim al-Jafari was clinging to his political life today after a meeting of the country's governing Shia coalition failed to agree to a replacement candidate. The meeting of the United Iraqi Alliance has been widely expected to appoint a new candidate to end months of political deadlock brought on by Mr. Jafari's nomination as Prime Minister last December. The Australian Foreign Affairs Minister has admitted under oath that he might have been wrong to be, quote, relaxed, unquote, about a UN investigation into the Australian Wheat Board's role in the Iraqi kickback scandal, but says his department, quote, did a good job, unquote, despite its failure to detect the $300 million in illicit payments to Saddam Hussein's regime breaking UN sanctions. He could not, quote, specifically recall, unquote, seeing 20 cables sent to his office and the department warning that the Australian Wheat Board might have been paying kickbacks to Saddam Hussein's regime in violation of UN sanctions. Mr. Downer took the stand as the Prime Minister, John Howard, sent his sworn statement to the Cole Inquiry, which will decide today whether he will be called to give evidence tomorrow. Last night, Labour's Foreign Affairs spokesman Kevin Rudd called on Mr. Downer to resign. Quote, given all that's happened today, Mr. Downer should simply do the honorable thing and go, unquote. Italian Prime Minister Silvio Berlusconi has refused to concede the country's elections, despite official results showing opposition leader Romano Prodi's center-left coalition taking control of both houses. He said, quote, there are big discrepancies, and all these discrepancies have to be looked at and checked, and I don't think that these could be called final results, unquote. This is the news on the Horn, the head-on radio network. I'm John Fox.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
One down, two to go. I'm Bob. That was our buddy Brian doing the announcing. If you want to get in touch with the program, if the bee is under your bonnet, the burr is under your saddle, for God's sakes, do something about it. 877, the number 4, head on, 877-443-2366 is the means by which you get relief. Email comes to Bob at headonradio.com. Whatever you got on your mind. You know, there's a talk show host out there who is substantially more wealthy than I, who purports to be a liberal. I somehow doubt it sometimes. Oh, we don't screen calls. Oh, heck no. Well, you know, I don't, if you can call Agnes screening calls, it's a matter of getting your name. But, you know, right now, Agnes not here. So whoever happens to be jingling the line, well, that's who gets the conversation. So if you've got something on your mind, don't sweat it. Get on board. On board with us right now, as a matter of fact, is our friend Jim in Beckley. Hey, Jim, you're head on.
Good evening. How are you?
I'm okay. That'd be better if Agnes was here, but, you know.
Well, we're doing quite well, I think.
Well, thank you.
Listen, with all due respect to the former callers, I know they have some serious topics to discuss, and I'm not trying to detract from that, especially the last caller, because I've worked with those soldiers like that when they came back from the first Gulf War. But I want to change gears here for a second, if you don't mind.
That's fine.
My sainted mother faxed a cartoon to me today, and I want to describe it to you, okay?
Have a run at it.
It showed this Victorian couple, two Victorian couples seated at dinner. And the women are in evening gowns, and the men in white tie and tails. And the male, one of the males, is standing up over the table, shaking his fist at his opposite dinner companion, saying, "Damn it, man, you've just farted in front of my wife." And his companion replies, "Well, pardon me, I didn't realize it was her turn."
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, coming from an 87-year-old lady, I think it's damn good.
I think your mom must be in pretty doggone good shape.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of NB 2020, I'm going to have to ask her if he's been getting into that lately. I don't know. But anyway, listen, my two cats, Rupert Brooke and Shady Lady, Rupert being on the bass guitar and Shady Lady being on the ocarina, we were going to sing, but they told me not to sing because I can't carry a tune in the bucket, though I have been known to make a joyful noise to the Lord. But as a compromise, I'm going to read some lyrics to you, okay?
Okay.
And I think it might apply to a lot of the topics that we've been discussing throughout the duration of this program.
All right.
And these were written in 1934 by Cole Porter. Okay?
Okay.
Times have changed, and we've often rewound the clock since the Puritans got a shock when they landed on Plymouth Rock. If today any shock they should try to stem, instead of landing on Plymouth Rock would land on them. In golden days, a glimpse of stocking was looked on as something shocking, but now God knows anything goes. Good authors, too, who once knew better words, now only use four-letter words, writing prose, anything goes. The world has gone mad today, and good's bad today, and black's white today, and day's night today, when most guys today, the women prize today, are just silly gigolos. And though I'm not a great romancer, I know that I'm bound to answer when you propose, anything goes. I think it's pretty relevant.
It is, too. And, you know, I couldn't help thinking, as I heard that rhyme scheme, you know, that would work in hip-hop, too?
The guy was just brilliant.
Oh, he was?
From Piru, Indiana. Indiana.
There was a movie out. Kevin Klein played Cole Porter.
It's called DeLovely.
DeLovely.
I thought it was kind of tired. I really did. I didn't like it too much. Speaking of movies, last night I screened Brokeback Mountain.
Did you?
Yeah, and I'm glad I saw it at home and not in a theater because it was just not the kind of movie I'd want to see in a public theater. But I can guarantee you it was one of the most heartrending films I've ever seen in my life. I mean, I felt as though I'd had an open thoracotomy or someone had ripped my heart from my chest. And it was a beautifully done movie. I mean, I preferred the original story and the New York Times back in 1998. However, Ang Lee did some supplemental work, which I thought came out pretty well, considering. And the theme that it dealt with was basically hate crimes.
Sure.
And one of the victims, one of the men, Jake Twist, eventually fell victor, was a victim of a hate crime. And, you know, it makes me wish that humanity viewed the issue of hate crimes to the point of saying why instead of saying why not.
Oh, I know. Well, all these things do kind of, you said it earlier, all these things do have a way of tying together, Jim.
Well, I think so. And when I saw the movie, and I had to stop it several times because I could not take certain things, you know, too handily. And, you know, and that's when I went up and, instead of getting the Indy 2020, got the Scotch. But it was a damn good movie, and I think they really copped out when they didn't give it the Best Picture because that other thing that got Best Picture was just ridiculous compared to this.
Well, I have not seen it yet. I didn't realize it was out on video.
Yeah, on DVD.
Yeah, some evening once the kids are all gone to bed, I'll pop it in the DVD back here. And
well, I think the children could probably handle it too because I'm sure they've been approached with the subject of this, that, and the other. But it's just about two men who care a lot for each other, and you know, it develops into a physical relationship, which is tastefully handled. And you know, let's face it. I mean, we're all human beings, and we're all God's children, and whether we're gay, straight, transgender, whatever, it doesn't make any difference to me. I mean, people who have these serious objections to it, I think they've got some problem in the closet themselves, and they just want to cover it up. I mean, when you've got Scooter Libby writing this book about girls and cages with bears.
I know.
And then, of course, I wondered last night when I was watching this movie, I wondered if Dick and Lynn Cheney have seen this and what their reaction to it would be.
Oh, you have to wonder. You have to wonder something like that. And of course, you know, the story we had toward the end of the program last night about Bill Frist's invite to Volpac. A friend sent me an email today directing me to go and look at the invitation that was put out. That thing was amazing.
Absolutely.
You know, where you had to take the cowboy's belt buckle off and get into his pants to find out that it was an invitation to Bill Frist's little party. Jiminy.
And here we go. The world has gone mad today. Good's bad today. Black's white today. And day's night today. I think it's pretty irrelevant, my friend.
I think it is relevant. And, you know, it's a pity. I was kind of looking forward to the musical performance.
Well, I'm going to have to get the guys together, and we're going to have to get in harmony. But I didn't, like I say, I didn't want to offend anybody or get too many rocks thrown at me by the other caller.
Hey, Jim, it couldn't be any worse than when I sing.
Well,
I can literally hear people clicking away from the internet stream from thousands of miles away every time I do it.
Well, that's what I did not want that to happen. I didn't want to waste those good lyrics with my bad voice. So you have a good evening, and
all right.
I wish all of your people the very best, and my regards to, is it Peter in Tallahassee?
Peter in Tallahassee.
I'm Peter, if you're listening, and all those, I'm just as crazy, as mad as a hatter.
we'll get you into that chat room yet.
Well, you can thank the federal government for that. They pushed me over the edge.
All right, thanks, Jim.
Good night.
Have a good one.
Out here.
If you haven't tried out the chat room at headonradionetwork.com, do so. You will. Now, see, they're starting it in there. Oh, Bob, don't sing. You know, dadgummit. No, but go on by headonradionetwork.com and then click on chat room. It's a fairly simple process. You should be able to get in and just have yourself a darn fine time, because it is. It's zany in there. And then, of course, there are, if you want your musings and your typings to be more perpetually preserved, go by headonradio.com and the message boards there. It's free in both instances. You know, this is community building. This is real time fun we have while the show's going on. Have a blast. Now, okay, poetry. No, we're not going to get all artsy or anything, but I want to share this with you. This rolled into Agnes's email today, and she shared it with me, and frankly, I'm going to share it with you. Because some of this stuff you don't let pass by. And with the rallies going on and the marching going on, God, what I wouldn't give to get a half a million people in Washington, D.C. to keep George Bush from nuking Iran. Because you know what? Immigration issues are going to become moot if George starts World War III. They kind of are. But this is the kind of stuff that floats around from the right wing. Immigrant's Poem. Title: Illegal Immigrant's Poem. Now, if you're having dinner, just put it down for a minute, take a breath, because I don't want to ruin anybody's meal. But this is one of the most profoundly xenophobic, racist, hateful, nasty little screeds that I've heard or read in a long, long time. I mean, I was surprised it didn't have a little link at the bottom where you could go to, you know, find your local Klan chapter. Illegal Immigrant's Poem. I cross ocean, poor and broke. Take bus, see employment folk. Nice man treat me good in there. Say I need to see welfare. Welfare say, you come no more, we send cash right to your door. Welfare checks, they make you wealthy, Medicaid, it keep you healthy. By and by, I got plenty money, thanks to you, American dummy. Write to friends in motherland, tell them, come fast as you can. They come in turbans and Ford trucks, I buy big house with welfare bucks. They come here, we live together, more welfare checks, it gets better. 14 families, they moving in, but neighbors' patience wearing thin. Finally, white guy moves away. Now I buy his house, and then I say, find more aliens for house to rent, and in the yard I put a tent. Send for family, they just trash. But they, too, draw the welfare cash. Everything is very good, and soon we own the neighborhood. We have hobby. It's called breeding. Welfare pay for baby feeding. Kids need dentist? Wife need pills? We get free. We got no bills. American crazy. He pay all year to keep welfare running here. We think America darn good place. Too darn good for the white man race. If they no like us, they can scram. Got lots of room in Pakistan. And then it ends. Send this to every American taxpayer you know. Our friend Luke in Knoxville from time to time has mentioned he thinks it's time to put out bumper stickers that say, had enough. I've had enough of the people who think like whoever the rotten, scum-sucking author of that little screed does. Notice how it's written in a sort of pidgin English without articles or normalized English sentence structure. Oh, it's cute. It's funny. It's funny. I like the part where they buy the house with their welfare check. Yeah, because that's true. That's true. It's absolutely the honest God's truth. There's furriners all over America, and they's buying houses with their welfare checks. Now, never mind the fact that most of your home mortgages is 20, 30 year or more. They's buying houses with welfare checks, even though they ain't no welfare checks no more, because we done got us some welfare reform, and you can't get no welfare for more than 5 years. I cross ocean, poor and broke. Take bus, see employment folk. Nice man, treat me good in there. Say I need to see welfare. Welfare say, you come no more. We send cash right to your door. This thing is making its rounds in the country. I don't know where it came from. Odds are it'll probably pop up in your email box at some point, because we've all got some weird-ass right-wing relative that thinks, you know, America's going to be destroyed by them brown people. Welfare. This was obviously written by someone who has never been within a 5 mile radius of the welfare office. Welfare checks, they make you wealthy. Medicare, Medicaid, it keep you healthy. By and by, I got plenty money thanks to you, American dummy. Do you see how, like I said, where the hell was the link to the Klan? This is disgusting. And this is what the Tom Tancredos of the world. You know, what I wouldn't give for some member of the House of Representatives the next time Tom Tancredo stands up and starts talking about them aliens, them immigrants, them illegal aliens, these lawbreakers. Just to see somebody say, sir, would the honorable member please inform me whether Tancredo is Sioux, Apache, Cheyenne, Chickasaw, Choctaw, Cherokee, Seneca, Delaware, Miami? Could you tell me what kind of Indian name Tancredo is? By and by, I got plenty money, thanks to you, American dummy. Write to friends in motherland, tell them, come fast as you can. They come in turbans and Ford trucks. I buy big house with welfare bucks. Gee, buddy, Christmas. Finally, white guy moves away. Now I buy his house. You know, of course, you do. It's another case of trying to govern by fear. That is the only thing that the Republican Party understands, is how to try to scare someone into following them. That is living proof of why their politics is such a failure. Because the only way they can lead is by fear. They have no ideas. They have no hope. They offer nothing for the future of your children and my children, your grandchildren, my future grandchildren. They offer nothing for the posterity of America. They offer only fear. We're going to be overrun with Mexicans. But of course, this tries to shy away a little bit from that, because after all, we learn at the end, if you didn't get the line about they come in turbans and Ford trucks, They're driving their Ford trucks across the Indian Ocean. All the way across India, across Africa. And then they're driving their Ford trucks across the Atlantic Ocean, too. While wearing their turbans. But, you know, down at the bottom, if they know like us, they can scram. Got lots of room in Pakistan. This is just a real little marvel, this thing is. Because it, let's see, it works in hate for immigrants in general, hate for people coming from south of the border, hate for Pakistanis. And it's written in a sort of Oriental Pidgin English. If they had something that could rhyme with yarmulke in there, they could have gone ahead and gone for the trifecta and gotten their anti-Semitism on, too. I'm not going to tolerate this kind of crap anymore. I don't tolerate people who use racial epithets for African Americans in my presence. And I'm not going to tolerate this kind of garbage either. Well, we're taking our jobs away. Yeah, no. I call the show head on, we deal with issues head on, and that's how I have to live my life. And I have to look at people and tell them that they are crazier than a sprayed roach. You know, okay, you know, shut up, Bob. You're making a tempest out of a teapot. It's just a stupid little poem. Let's see, from the Boston Globe. Headline. U.S. rule demands proof of citizenship for health care. Law could hurt the state's poorest. So it's writing from a Massachusetts perspective. Almost all of the state's poorest residents will have to show proof of U.S. citizenship to continue getting medical care by July 1st under a little-noticed federal law. You know, it's those little-noticed federal laws that just make me want to... They'll just make... chew wood. Just gnaw off a 16-penny nail and start crunching. Under a little-noticed federal law that could endanger coverage for many, as Massachusetts is trying to expand access to health care. Born out of ongoing efforts in Washington to clamp down on illegal immigration, the new federal requirement compels anyone seeking Medicaid coverage to provide a birth certificate, a passport, or another form of identification in order to sign up for benefits or to renew them. The requirement was tucked into the Deficit Reduction Act of 2005, which President Bush signed into law earlier this year. Healthcare specialists voiced fear that because many Medicaid recipients, including the homeless and the mentally disabled, won't be able to easily produce documentation of their citizenship, they will have difficulty receiving care at community health centers, hospitals, or anywhere else. Sir, what's that? You have heart attack. Sir, can I see your proof of citizenship?
Die.
Sir, I understand you're dying, but federal law says that we need to see your proof of citizenship.
Pain! Left arm! Help!
Sir, there's no need in becoming hysterical. All we need to see from you is your proof of citizenship, and we will happily deal with your little arm pain you're talking about there. Poor John McCormick, he's from Massachusetts. He's leading this fight with Taylor's Law. And at the same time he's fighting to give access to people who have been butchered by doctors, on the other side of the spectrum, the federal government is telling doctors that, you know, if they're competent enough to treat somebody, they still have to let them die because, well, you know, and you're poor. You mean you don't take your birth certificate everywhere you go? How dare you get in a car wreck? Didn't your mother tell you about wearing clean underwear and carrying your birth certificate everywhere? What kind of moron are you? This is the America that my forebears have fought and died for? Is it really? This is astonishing. What in the hell has become of us? I frankly don't know. I just don't know. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
The Cup of Joe Report. I'm Joe Vecchio. A recent article in the New York Times points out a potential problem in some mega-rich communities where housing is so expensive that teachers, policemen, and firemen are in short supply because no one who earns that kind of salary can afford to live there. The article mentions a group of volunteers who, with the help of Habitat for Humanity, are refurbishing an old home that's on land that was purchased by the county for a water storage tank. This home would be for a fireman. While naturally I applaud the people who are doing this, I think it says something about the society we now live in that teachers, policemen, firemen, and other civil servants, who are an integral part of any community, need to live in an old house fixed up by local volunteers and Habitat for Humanity. It demonstrates clearly how little we value the people who provide these necessary services, and it demonstrates what great lengths the very rich will go to make sure that they get the services they need and still be able to distance themselves from those providing them. I don't begrudge anyone having great wealth, but when it gets to the point where some begin to believe that more money makes you more human, and therefore that less money makes you less human, then it begins to pose a threat to everyone, rich and poor alike. Whether they want to believe it or not, the richest of the rich need the social infrastructure just as much as do the poorest of the poor. If it collapses for one group of people, it can collapse for others. Now get back to work. This has been the Cup of Joe Report by Joe Vecchio. Listen to the Cup of Joe radio show via streaming audio every Saturday evening from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Head On Radio Network.
The president came out and talked about the Iraq War and how he had a strategy to win the peace. I have some exclusive audio. This is actually him preparing for the speech in front of the mirror. This is him laying out the strategy for Iraq.
That was the most coherent thing I've heard him say in ages, man.
You know, if he really spoke that way, it would be so much better for us all. Because at least then we would know that he's an incoherent bastard. We could have him locked up.
And that's just a taste of what Bruce and I got up to last weekend. Come and join us next weekend, Saturday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. To get the stream details, go to fourthestateradio.com. That's fourthestateradio.com.
Trash in Ecuador, bought a good suit of clothes, flew on up to Mexico, standing by the shore, waiting for some mystery man to pay him for his time, thinking about all the money he'd made, couldn't help. Havana daydreaming, boy, he's just dreaming his life away.
Sometimes,
Daddy.
chap that sugar cane. So one day he fell dead. Jesus had a wandering feeling, swimming around in his head.
Sometimes I just want to be on a beach somewhere. I read stories. U.S. rule demands proof of citizenship for health care. Jesus. I just want to be on a beach somewhere, my toes stuck down in the sand, you know, just listen to the psh, psh, psh of the surf, you know, just washing up on the white sand shores of the Gulf of Mexico. I want to have my little disc player and my little headphones and be listening to Jimmy Buffett and you know, the little drink with an umbrella in it and something frozen and frothy and, you know, with a stupid name. And just forget that all this is going on. But I can't. And I won't. Because even in the middle of your Jimmy Buffett, you get lines like that. Daddy chopped that sugar cane till one day he fell dead. Guess what? That is the Republican vision for America. And you and I both know it. We all know it. Because, you see, it's cheaper if you just drop dead than if you show up at a hospital because you've been working your ass off and, you know, something's gone wrong. And then, of course, you get the fun little poem of, you know, kidney dentist? Wife need pills? We get free. We got no bills. American crazy. He pay all year to keep welfare running here. Hate the poor. Hate the poor. Hate the different. Hate the brown. Hate the poor. Hate the different. Hate the brown. Why won't they speak English? Why can't they, if they's a coming here, can't they learn to speak English first? Why's they carrying that Mexican flag? Don't they know they're in America? It makes me absolutely nuts. And of course, you know, if you go and read the story at Boston.com, Boston Globe, you find you find comments from people like Ms. Waldman, who is quoted in the story. And she says, this shouldn't take away from people's access to health care. All you need to do is show that you're a citizen. Okay, can I get the damn tattoo? Is that where we're going? That we all get a tattoo showing that we're citizens so that if we do happen to show up unconscious at a hospital, we can get medical care instead of being left to damn die? Is that where we're headed? Is it tattoos now in the Bush administration? Huh? Is that where we're going? Are we now in a circumstance where we're dealing? Oh, I'll bust my buttons. Why, look, everybody can't travel around with their birth certificate. What we need is a national ID. And you can show it if you try to vote, too. Slippery, sleazy little common street thugs. That's what they are. Let's go to the phones. Hey, you're head on. Who have I got?
Hey, you got Andrew.
Hey, Andrew. How you doing? Good talking to you.
Suddenly you're going to bust the blood vessel.
You know, I felt that little throbbing thing going on my left temple there for a minute, and the left eye was wandering off a little.
Oh, my. That's not good. I said, I got to call you up because when you're talking about this is America and whatnot, I was reading an article in my opinion page at my local paper and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
Reading an article there, and somebody wrote in and they said, they need to learn English. This is America. They need to forget where they came from. Once they're here, they're Americans. You don't need nothing in front of American. All you need, you don't need no Mexican-Americans and what have you. We're all Americans, and they need to learn the language.
We're all Americans. It's just that some people are more American than others.
Okay, so we don't have Irish-Americans. We don't have, you know, Arab-Americans. Black Americans, African Americans. I mean,
yeah, but you see, there's a big difference, Andrew, and you and I both. I mean, we know it.
Yeah.
If for instance, you go down to North Carolina in the summer and go to the Highland rallies and all the guys wear skirts, You're celebrating your Scottish heritage, but by God, if you show up in a dashiki... Oh, no. No, no. Now, see, then you're being militant.
Exactly. And it's just, I don't know, it's the hypocrisy, you know, it's the hypocrisy and the whole Iran thing with the technical nukes and everything.
Yeah.
That is, how can I put it? It's like a Cuban Missile Crisis of the 21st century because it's like, I wasn't around for the Cuban Missile Crisis, but I knew America was aware of it.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's the shoes on the other foot because we are the aggressor. And everybody's asleep at the same time,
mm-hmm.
which, you know.
Well, and the sad thing, it does bear some resemblance, Andrew, only in this instance, we're the one who is being the aggressor, A, and B, where we had real live, honest-to-God photographs of the Soviets trying to install nukes in Cuba,
exactly.
We're just making it up as we go along with Iran.
Exactly. I mean, our nuclear, non-nuclear proliferation operations have been gutted, basically.
Sure.
I mean,
well, you know, and the big, you know.
With the plane leak, it's like, hey.
Yeah,
what's going on here, dude? There's nothing's adding up. I mean,
and you know, it's worth remembering that Valerie Plame's job was to monitor nuclear proliferation in Iran.
Yes, and it just, you know, it says, hey, is this not adding up? I mean, even if that information was declassified, okay,
on the fly,
even if it was declassified, you still wouldn't want to release it. You would lock those records away. You would put those away and bury them in some bunker somewhere.
Well, sure, but by the same token, you know how these little weasels at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue think, Andrew.
Yeah.
They thought on the one hand, okay, well, Joseph Wilson's out doing this. We're going to pay Joseph Wilson back and let him know that
exactly.
we can get to his wife. You know, it's the horse's head in the bed.
Yeah.
You know,
that's what it is.
On the other hand, they knew what Valerie Plame was doing.
Mm-hmm.
They knew what she was working on. She was working on non-proliferation issues with regard to Iran, and they needed her out of the way.
Yeah, it's almost it's like the mentality of, I'm going to cut off your arm so I can cut off my leg.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah, because if she was out of the way, well, if it turned out that they were able to bust George on the yellow cake, well, she was going to be right there, and she was going to be in a position to bust George again when he came out and said, we have discovered that the Iranians are making nuclear bombs.
Yeah.
And she could bust him then, so they got a twofer.
I don't see. That's right there. It's just simple. It's right there, but, you know, it's the big lie, you know, it's the big lie.
No, and be afraid, America, be very afraid.
Yeah, be very afraid, because, I mean, that goes to show you the Fourth Estate is pretty much dead, except for, like, head-on, you know, liberal and progressive talk
yeah.
off the ground at that.
Yeah.
So.
Well, you know, we're trying, but people just have to understand that, and you know, this has been one of those long time coming processes, Andrew, because the entertainmentization of news, you know, started back in the 70s, and it's just taken them a while to get it perfected. The business, did you catch the business with Dick Cheney throwing out the first pitch at RFK Stadium today?
Yeah.
Well, did you notice the fact that Fox muted the boos?
No, they didn't. I didn't notice that.
Yeah, they. Yeah, by the time it comes around, you don't hear the boos. You don't hear the boos on the news clips.
Well, see, and, I don't watch that much TV anyway.
Yeah,
so.
They just about booed Dick Cheney's socks off.
Oh, God.
And Fox, you know, you're not
allowed to. That's great.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah. And then, you know, he's, you know, these brawny men. That guy couldn't even stand on the mound and throw the baseball 60 feet and 6 inches. He had to, you know, he came down to like little league distance, and he still threw it in the dirt.
I'm surprised he didn't short out his pacemaker on the recoil.
Well, you know, it's built in, and you know, he's got a little replay module in his ear that says clear, clear.
Oh, man, God. But just wanted to call up and give a shout out and say hello to everybody on Head On.
Well, thank you very kindly, Andrew. It's always good to hear from you, man.
Yeah.
All right.
Hear from you too.
All right. Take care.
Take
Bye
easy.
Now. Our pal Andrew in New York State, keeping me sane, because some of this does make me crazy. Some of this makes my head hurt. Some of it, you know, really. This is not the America that you fight and die for. If you go to Bart Kopp and back up one page, I meant to mention this to you. There's a huge article out of the Rocky Mountain News. It's like 12 pages, you know, page by page by page, clickage. And it's as heartbreaking as they come. It follows the duties of a Marine officer who, instead of being in Iraq fighting where he thought he was going to be, has been posted to the job of going around and telling families that the child that they raised from an infant has been blown to bits in a useless, worthless lie of a war. And in the, not the page that's up now, but you have to go back one. If you go to the bottom, there's a previous link there. There's a photograph from that article Bart Kopp posted. The pregnant wife of a dead Marine who said she wanted to, the night before the funeral, said she wanted to spend one last night with her husband. So they put it, the honor guard Marines put a pallet together for her. And she slept right there in the chapel, with the baby moving inside her. And that thing has been replayed time and time and time again. And now the sleazebags are out there attacking Cindy Sheehan because she talks about Casey, but she ain't put no gravestone up for him. And she issued a stunning, stirring rebuttal of that. You can read that at truthout.org. And you can read silently or to yourself out loud or whatever, as well as I can do it for you. But the link there is at Bart Kopp to the Rocky Mountain News article, and the Cindy Sheehan issue is at truthout.org. Give them a read. We need to remind ourselves from time to time just what is going on, and what, and the real time hell that people are being put through. And it's not, you know, it's not just us, it's the world over. Over at WD40.com, D-U-B-Y-A, the letter D, 40, WD40.com, our buddies Wally and Dookie and Clyde and Ed put up a link today of animation showing you what a bunker buster nuke will do. And it's from the Union of Concerned Scientists, you know, smart, really, really smart people. I mean, folks that understand the physics and the whys and wherefores of the bang and the don't bang of these weapons. This bunker buster bomb that dear leader wants to use won't do the job. It won't do the job. It goes a few feet into the earth and doesn't even generate enough shockwave to get at the bunkers. But it'll produce radioactive poison that will go all the way to India. Oh, hey, look at that. India? Nuclear country. Pakistan, the cloud goes over them, too. And you know what? Whether it's the actual blast or the after effects of it, you know, call me crazy, but it's just like being nuked when the cloud goes over. Because you have been. So we nuke Iran, and the fallout kills a few thousand or millions, and kills them in Afghanistan, and kills them in Pakistan, kills them in India. Or maybe the wind's blowing the other way, and hey, here's one for you. The fallout settles on Mecca. Could happen. How's the world going to feel about us then? Now we're fighting them over there, so we don't have to fight them here. Let's go to the phones. Hey, who have I got?
Bob.
Hey, Bob.
Up here in North Dakota.
Yes, indeed. How you doing?
Oh, goodness. Tonight's been a tough one.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah, John up front, he took me right back to, yeah, I walked in his shoes.
Yeah, I was thinking about that when he was telling his story.
And then Andrew, he kind of perked me up there a bit, calling from New York. Jim and the boys and everybody out there, I just wonder if you realize that maybe we are, and this is to Andy in the UK, maybe, just maybe, you're standing at
place we're talking about.
Yeah.
And maybe, you know, this is the time to take that stand, you know, and just stand. I mean, it doesn't matter. I mean, black, white, red, yellow, it doesn't matter anymore. Either we stand or we die.
Well, and that's the question I keep having to ask. If it's not worth it to stand up and demand that no one be nuked in our name, what's worth standing up for?
Equal justice under the law. Equal justice, and that means for all mankind, not just Americans or Africans or Mexicans and all the cans. I'm sick and tired. I'm so sick and tired of being sick and tired, Bob.
I know. You raise a very interesting point there, Bob, because something that I'm constantly hearing from the freaks in the wild-eyed right is, and legal scholars say this, Bob. They say, well, of course, you understand that the provisions of the United States Constitution don't apply to people in other countries. You know, in other words, if we capture somebody in some foreign country that they have no constitutional rights under the United States Constitution, the only reason for creating that Constitution, Bob, was because we hoped that someday everyone would have rights like that.
I kind of remember something back there in that preamble thing that said, all men are created. All men, all mankind, that means woman, man, any human being, they're all created equal. It doesn't say within the borders of, you know, these mystical, magical lines we draw around things, you know, like called states or countries or whatever. It says all men are created equal and that they are endowed by their creator with certain inalienable rights.
Yes.
Among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. It doesn't guarantee happiness.
And it doesn't say where you're going to be doing the living, the liberty, and or pursuing the happiness.
That's right. And if all these Reich, and I mean Reich wingers, Nazi little piglets that they are, if they would just read their own constitution and read the words that are written on there and know that we are standing in the...
Yeah, but see, they're not going to read it, Bob, because, you know, if a neocon or a Republican starts reading the Constitution, they get all confused because apparently, from what we're hearing, they start hallucinating things.
Well, yeah, there's...
They start hallucinating unitary executives and unitary powers and words start appearing in between the other words, like if somebody had written on it with lemon juice and held it up to a light bulb and bang, there it is, it's a unitary
truth.
Executive, by God.
Truth fuddles and befuddles them, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's the problem. You see, we don't know how to open their eyes. We have no way of connecting with them. So therefore, they have built this wall between us. We didn't do it. The neocons or neo-fascists or neo-pigs or whatever you want to call them. These neo-Nazis, that's what they are. They don't got the skinheads, but some of them do, and we see them up there on the Capitol Hill prancing around like they're something special because they just happened to steal two elections, happened to be the thieves that are robbing the treasury of the greatest nation that's ever been on this planet. As far as I'm concerned, the United States had, and I mean that in a past tense, we had the potential of being a boon to mankind, but we have become an albatross, Bob, and we are dragging this United States, this they call themselves United, but they're not, states of America are dragging all of humanity into an abyss. And if we, the people, and I mean all the people, don't stand now, then we will go into the abyss with those. And I'm looking at this Italian election, and I'm looking at some people that, you know, are saying no to fascism, okay?
Yeah.
And I'm looking at
and they're going to have to run the fascist out, it looks like, because the sucker won't concede.
Can you spell Benito Mussolini?
Better than I care to.
Spell it. Just can you pronounce? You know, remember what happened to Benito?
Yeah.
Do you remember what happened to his girlfriend?
Yeah, the same thing that happened to him.
Yeah. So when the people finally wake up and realize that we're in the same fix here, I wonder if Benito Bush. And I don't give a damn if Agent Fred coming over to my house tonight.
I understand. The thing is, this can be done peacefully and legally.
It only takes
a few million people hitting the streets.
Well, then,
and you know,
get at it. Let's not take Bob. I know your heart, and I know it's strong, and I know the people that I've gotten connected with for some crazy reason. I don't know why I got dragged into this thing. All I want to do is go fishing, and the bastards wouldn't let me.
I know.
Okay?
Yeah, I know. That's me and my toes in the sand at the beach, and the bastards won't let me.
Yeah, that's all I want to do is take my boys and go fishing. I did not want a fight. But, you know, I grew up listening to men talk about World War II, my uncles and my dad, and they'd get around and they'd talk about it. And, of course, being a young, just naive young man, I heard their talk, and most of it wasn't about what war was really about. It was all the fun they had and all the things they did. And they never really got into the nitty gritty of it, you know.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like this hiding the coffin, hiding the pain, and trying to make it some glorious crusade.
Yeah.
Yeah. To march across the world where war is just going to march everywhere.
Well, they've quit calling it the Iraq War. Now they call it the Long War.
That's what the monkey said. He said, "It's democracy. It's going to march everywhere." Excuse me.
Yeah, and it's going to march on a road of bones, Bob.
On our bones, and the bones of our children and our children's children.
Yeah, Bob, I would be interested to have your thoughts. If you get a chance, go to the previous, like I was talking about, the previous page of Bart Kopp. Read that article from the Rocky Mountain News.
Been there. Yeah. I'm a Bart Kopp subscriber.
Oh, well, okay.
No, and I give Bart I even listen to the Bart Radio.
Well, he does a good show.
Yeah, and it's a little more risque than yours.
Well, I'd love to hear him go live myself, but you know that's me.
Well, you know, hey,
he likes to polish it up and have it all nicely produced.
He likes to say things that are true, and a little risque. But anyway, I just wanted—I didn't really want to jump in. I thought, Bob, you got to stay off this thing. You got to stop jumping in. But Andrew, I listened to him, and I said, I love his voice and his reason. And his ability to just kind of calm things and bring things into perspective.
Oh, and Andrew's good for me because he brings me back down to earth. Hey, Bob, I appreciate it. We got to roll now, brother.
Okay. Well, hey, to everybody out there, let's just take a breath, then stand up and get in the breach. And don't let them pass, because we're not going any further. We've been close enough to the damn brink. Let's not go over it, and let's turn this thing around. We got the elections coming up. Let's work on that. Let's work on getting Democrats in there. Even if you don't like it, like I said, hold your nose and vote for a D, but don't vote for anything that's got an R after it.
All right. Take care, Bob.
Okay, baby.
Later. Send their kids to Disneyland. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Give him a Big Mac and a prayer. Then forget that they are there. It's all there inside of me. All that guilt for all to see. Yes, I am American.
Head on Radio Network News, I'm John Fox. Five American soldiers have been killed in Iraq, including three killed Tuesday north of Baghdad, the U.S. military said. A U.S. statement said the three members of the multinational division Baghdad died Tuesday afternoon in a roadside bombing, but did not give a precise location. Another soldier assigned to the 228th Brigade Combat Team died Monday of wounds suffered the day before in fighting in Anbar province west of the capital, the military said. Another soldier assigned to the 130th Engineer Brigade was killed Sunday when his vehicle was hit by a blast near Balad, the U.S. reported. At least 2,359 members of the U.S. military have died since the beginning of the war in 2003, according to the Associated Press count. The figure includes seven military civilians. Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad confirmed Tuesday that his country had successfully produced low-grade enriched uranium at a level sufficient to power nuclear plants. Ahmadinejad said, quote, "I officially announced that Iran has joined countries with nuclear technology," unquote. He stressed that Iran's nuclear efforts are for peaceful efforts and that no country should stand in its way. He said, quote, "Our nation is a peaceful nation. And today we are interested in operating under IAEA supervision," unquote. IAEA inspectors are at the facility in the Nance, but it is unclear whether they witnessed the enrichment process. Massive street marches to protest a proposed crackdown on illegal immigration have energized U.S. Hispanics and may signal a new day of Hispanic political involvement. The demonstrations, which attracted both documented and undocumented residents across the country, mean politicians may face an angry Hispanic electorate in which Republicans would be the biggest losers, activists said on Monday. As happened in Los Angeles, the Dallas March stunned the organizers, who expected only 20,000 people in politically conservative Texas. Lydia Gonzalez-Welch, a board member with the League of United Latin American Citizens, or LULAC, which promoted the so-called mega march, said, quote, "Never in our wildest dreams did we imagine 500,000 people marching in a city that has 1.2 million people," unquote. A Spanish judge today charged 29 people over the 2004 Madrid train bombings following a two-year investigation. The March 11 attacks, for which Islamist militants claim responsibility, killed 191 people and injured more than 1,700. Six of the 29 men were charged with 191 counts of murder and 1,755 counts of attempted murder. The investigative judge concluded that the bombings had been carried out by an independent local cell of Islamist militants inspired but not directed by Al-Qaeda. This is News on the Horn.
The major record labels say that downloading music from the internet is stealing. But according to these people, making a mixtape for your friend is stealing too. So is making a tape of a radio show.
Clone Radio. We play the songs that sound more like everyone else than anyone else.
When a rock band plays an AC/DC cover at a bar that doesn't pay ASCAP, that's stealing. Or have you ever sung happy birthday to your friend at a restaurant?
Warning!
Happy birthday is copyrighted. So if you're singing in a public place, you'd better be paying royalties or you'll be stealing music. Does all this stuff about stealing music sound absurd? Would you rather have a world where our music culture wasn't the intellectual property of five corporations? Then stop giving them your money and make sure your friends and family don't either. Better yet, try burning them a CD. If we pull the plug on major labels, music gets better. Find out more about what you can do. Check out downhillbattle.org.
The embattled Iraqi Prime Minister Ibrahim al-Jafari was clinging to his political life today after a meeting of the country's governing Shia coalition failed to agree to a replacement candidate. The meeting of the United Iraqi Alliance has been widely expected to appoint a new candidate to end months of political deadlock brought on by Mr. Jafari's nomination as Prime Minister last December. The Australian Foreign Affairs Minister has admitted under oath that he might have been wrong to be, quote, relaxed, unquote, about a UN investigation into the Australian Wheat Board's role in the Iraqi kickback scandal, but says his department, quote, did a good job, unquote, despite its failure to detect the $300 million in illicit payments to Saddam Hussein's regime breaking UN sanctions. He could not, quote, specifically recall, unquote, seeing 20 cables sent to his office and the department warning that the Australian Wheat Board might have been paying kickbacks to Saddam Hussein's regime in violation of UN sanctions. Mr. Downer took the stand as the Prime Minister John Howard sent his sworn statement to the coal inquiry, which will decide today whether he will be called to give evidence tomorrow. Last night, Labor's foreign affairs spokesman Kevin Rudd called on Mr. Downer to resign. Quote, given all that's happened today, Mr. Downer should simply do the honorable thing and go, unquote. Italian Prime Minister Silvio Berlusconi has refused to concede the country's elections, despite official results showing opposition leader Romano Prodi's center-left coalition taking control of both houses. He said, quote, there are big discrepancies, and all these discrepancies have to be looked at and checked, and I don't think that these could be called final results, unquote. This is the news on the Horn, the Head On Radio Network. I'm John Fox.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
All righty then. You know the phone number. If you've got something you want to get off your chest, that's fine by me. Very interesting email from our buddy Andy in the Netherlands, another denizen of the headonradionetwork.com chat room as well. Hi, Bob. I just had a eureka moment this morning. I finally am able to define exactly what pisses me off about right-wing politics. And, you know, it's a surprisingly short email for the topic. Here goes. Their singular worldview is based on two religions or belief systems which make them polytheists. On the one hand, they believe in the Christian religion based on the Bible, and on the other hand, they believe in the market system based on their other Bible, The Wealth of Nations by Adam Smith. This is ultimately not only hypocritical, but also barbarism. An example of the hypocrisy is that caring for the poor and needy is directly opposed to their profit-making. And an explanation of barbarism is that their social organization is based on anarchic free-market clans, corporations who live off of plunder. This polytheism becomes their singular worldview when they, as one party, invoke the power of both their gods, the Lord God and the money God, in the big government or state which they so desperately need to maintain their hegemony. Who do they hate more than liberals? Themselves. And that's what pisses me off about right-wing politics. Thanks, Andy. Thanks very much. Quite succinct. Quite true. That's, and it goes back to our little discussion last night about Bill Frist's bizarre little party invitation. It has something to do with their latency. Because as it turns out, Bill Frist's marketing firm is run by a guy named Linus Canagani or something like that. Linus is his first name. I mean, the Linus jumped out and grabbed me because it was like with the blanket and the brick wall and talking to Charlie Brown, so that stuck. But Linus is a Republican strategist. He is gay. And he is happily working with Bill Frist to try to make the lives of other gay people more miserable. And he's in business with the wife of, oh, you know, I mean, you want to talk? I don't know what kind of handkerchief you wear in your back pocket for this kind of incest. But he's in business with the wife of Kit Bond of Missouri, who has never found an anti-gay issue that she didn't want to get behind. And I'm sorry, you know, there's a promo there's a promo that runs on Air America. Some of you may have heard it. One of the hosts, one with whom I'm not particularly familiar, who says, well, you know, you can't just call people Nazis. We have to recognize the Nazis for who they were and understand that, well, it wasn't that long ago. And, well, you know, we got to let the Nazis be the Nazis. And you can't just call somebody a Nazi because you've run out of rhetorical other things to call them or something like that. And that pisses me off. Because you know what? When you behave as, in particular, gay Republicans behave, and you work for all your worth against other gay people, it's okay to use the Nazi reference, or more particularly, the Capo reference. Mark Klempner, whom we interviewed last Wednesday night, The Heart Has Reasons, a wonderful, wonderful history, a heart-rending history to take down, an energizing history to read. You know, he talked about the people who collaborated in the Jewish community with the Nazis because, well, you know, we can send those people, let those people go to the death camps, but we're going to be all right. And they went to the death camps, too. So how can you not make the analogy between people like this guy who does the marketing for Bill Frist, Linus, whatever his name is, and the capos in Auschwitz and Bergen-Belsen and Treblinka, Dachau, who gladly led their brothers and sisters to the ovens in order to stay out of them another day longer. How can you not make that comparison? Well, you can't not make it, because it is there and it is real. And I'm sorry if our opposition in this doesn't like being called Nazis, because you know what? If you don't want to get called a Nazi, quit acting like one, for God's sakes. Quit acting like there is an entire race of people on the planet that you don't care if they live or die. Quit acting like there is an entire race of people on the planet that you want to see dead. Quit acting like not having pretty white ivory soap skin somehow entitles you to a decent life on this little planet. Just quit it, and I'll quit calling them Nazis. When they stop being Nazis, I'll quit calling them Nazis. It seems pretty damn simple to me. But I guess I'm crazy. Let's go to the phones. Our good friend Fritz is with us from New Mexico. Fritz, how you doing? Thanks
all
for
right,
calling in.
I'm hanging, and how about yourself?
Yeah, you know, I'm okay.
Good. You white boy, you pink-skinned son of a whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and you're beating on your fellows there.
Oh, I know. I'm a discredit to my race.
That's right. You certainly are, Bob. Well, you know, we can always go for Stalinists. That's an alternative.
Well, yeah, that's true, too, and they don't like that either. They just don't like being called what they are.
Yeah, well, you know, another parallel that I think really needs to be hammered home and pointed out over and over again is the infiltration of young people's minds with this No Child Left Behind crap and this anti-science crap.
Yeah.
And you know where I stand on science.
Oh, exactly. Well,
you know, I don't think science is the savior, believe me. I think there's a lot of single-minded and narrow-minded thinking in science which needs to become more holistic. But for God's sake, it is able to predict what goes on in the world around us.
Well, sure. And
you're going to accept, I'm sorry, and no. You're going to accept cars, and you're going to accept the stuff that you got in your house. You cannot think and reject science at the same time.
Well, but there are a lot of people who do, because you know, obviously there are people who walk to the wall and then they flip the switch and the magic happens and the light goes on.
Exactly. Yeah, as I said to a guy last night, I said, give up your car, okay? You ready to give up your car? And, of course, he looked at me wide-eyed, and of course, he wasn't. You know, and part of this, is the reason I got on this was I heard about Italy and the apparent rejection of Berlusconi. You know, and I was in Italy a year and a half ago and spoke to lots of Italian people in their own tongue and sensed this incredible political astuteness there that is not present here. And, you know, it's like, if they took this step where they're finally rejecting this corporatist fool, because that's what the guy is. You know,
yeah.
He's a fascist in the real sense because, you know, he's Mr. Corporatist in Italy. He's the ultimate merger of government and corporation.
Yeah, and he's a media mogul as well, and that makes it even more profound.
Absolutely. And I could sense that they were ready because they were politically savvy to take the step. And then I wonder, well, maybe that's a good sign for here. And then I think of, you know, all the non-critical thinking education that's going on in our schools, and that's what makes me really worry about the next generation. I worry for your children, Bob.
I do, too. I'm right there on the ground watching the education they're getting. And, frankly, they're you know, I'm not wealthy enough to send them to a private school, and if I was, the only private schools around here are the ones that are teaching, you know, that the magic happens.
Oh, my God.
You know, so we do what we can to supplant or supplement their education around here, but, you know, they're going to have one choice, and I'm not being snobbish, they're going to have one choice for a foreign language when they go to high school. Spanish.
Spanish, yeah.
And, you know, I wish I had learned more of it. I honestly do.
Yeah, me too.
But I want them to have Latin and German and Italian and all of that because it stretches the mind.
It stretches the mind and it stretches your world. And it's going to become more and more important for us because as much as, you know, the current regime and the current thinking is, well, we can just bomb the hell out of the rest of the world and become an island, it's going to be just the opposite. You know, they're going to find out, or we're going to find out, that if you get shocked in about 10, 15 years and see that, in fact, we're going to have to acquiesce to the rest of the world because, you know, this whole thing about enriched uranium, my God, that's available everywhere. They knew how to enrich uranium. That was on the Internet, what, early 90s?
Well, sure. You can buy it on the black market.
You know, and then there's this whole fiasco of thinking in the American mind that, well, these other countries are stupid, these stupid third world countries. They can't possibly have scientists and engineers. Well, look at Iraq. There was an incredible number of intelligent scientists and engineers.
Well, isn't that part and parcel of the racist xenophobia that just inhabits our policy?
It goes right along with what you were just talking about, absolutely.
You know, they couldn't my God, we're talking about, maybe we need to start reprinting the maps of the world, and I know it might offend them a little bit, but, you know, for American consumption, call it Persia again.
Yeah.
Because, you know, that's the cradle of just a boatload of learning. And
interesting.
And incredibly curious people.
Oh, absolutely. It's interesting that you mention that. I'm just finishing Gore Vidal's Julian. Did you ever read it?
No. No.
Wonderful novel.
I read, I don't know, was it Gore Vidal? There was one,
several historical novels.
There was one called Democracy that was set in the ancient Persia of Cyrus or you know, one of those great Persian leaders. And it completely blows you away. And when you realize that Alexander, you know, once he conquered Persia, he drove his men nuts because he went native.
Yeah.
He realized the majesty of what he had just conquered.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And, you know, it's funny. Julian got that far, and he couldn't do it. He couldn't complete it. Julian was apparently, from the way Gore Vidal frames it, the last Roman emperor that really had it together, as an intellectual.
Mm-hmm.
And got as far as Persia and sort of, you know, 25% conquered it and then turned around and had to go home. And there was that same realization, you know, the cradle of civilization. You know, for us to think that they're stupid is so insular, it's so provincial. You know.
Now I want to be clear, Fritz. I'm talking about the great mass of the Iranian people. I think there is a now. Saddam was not insane. I think there is an insane Kim Jong Il kind of streak in some of the Iranian leadership.
Absolutely, and it's the same kind of fundamentalist insanity that you see everywhere in the world.
Yeah, I mean, how crazy do you have to be to stand up and brag about you just got enriched uranium? Because, like I said at the top of the program, it really is taking a sharp stick and just poking George Bush.
Absolutely it is. And I didn't see the top of the program, but you're still right. You know, they are. They're nuts. You know, and I'm not going to deny that either. You know, and Agent Fred... You know, if you're listening, we understand that. But the point is, you still have to somehow invoke diplomacy. You can't go bombing the shit out of them and expect the people not to get PO'd at it.
Right.
You can't do it.
Well, they've got this, again, crazy, 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 give them some medicine notion, Fritz, that if we just drop enough bombs on Iran, that suddenly, you know, all the teenagers who like to listen to the disco music, you know, that they're suddenly going to rise up and overthrow the fundies.
Right,
that
yeah.
ain't going to happen, Fritz. They're going to rise up and they're going to say, see, we were right. We march lockstep with us crazy fundamentalists, because if you don't, well, the Americans are killing you anyway.
That's right. The fundamentalists must have been right. They're going to get quite PO'd. Yeah. It's just absolutely the wrong kind of thing.
A nation,
totally back-assward.
Yeah, a nation that is being bombed by another country doesn't fall apart. It coalesces.
Put yourself in their position. That's the thing to say to people that don't understand that. Put yourself in your position. What would you do if it happened to us? Would you, you know, would you throw roses around like we expected the Iraqis to do? And would you coalesce against your regime like we're saying the Iranians would do? Or would you want to get back at them?
You'd want to get back at them.
Human nature.
Because their leadership is crazy. But even if their leadership is crazy, that does not justify me or you as Americans in advocate. You know, because we're not talking about killing the crazy people. The crazy people have bunkers our bombs can't reach.
That's right. What we're going to kill is the poor civilians again.
Yeah.
Poor innocents.
Or the scientists who are working in those nuclear centers, because they've been told, if you don't, we kill your baby daughter.
That's correct.
And so,
same thing Saddam told his scientists. And I know that because I've talked to people who were there.
Right.
Who talked to those scientists.
But it's okay to slaughter them. You know, maybe I don't like to think that I'm out of the ordinary from people. I like to think that I'm just another Joe. Okay? But I look at photographs and they touch me. You know, I've got we've got a collection of just absolutely ancient National Geographics. And
yeah,
the
old ones were wonderful.
Yeah, and you know, and I'm not talking about just the naked African pictures. I ran across one. We were trying to do some cleaning out. We're fooling around with some appliances and stuff, and I ran across one, and there was, you know, inside Iran, and this is during the Shah's day. And there are photographs, those gorgeous National Geographic color photographs of absolutely exquisite human beings.
Yeah, back in the late 60s, early 70s, maybe?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And they're smiling, and they don't look that, and with the gorgeous almond-shaped eyes.
Yeah, they're beautiful people.
Yes. And
but
George Bush
white,
wants
Bob.
To freaking kill them. But they are white.
Yeah,
the
you know,
Caucasus Mountains are there. It's where Caucasians come from.
Yeah, in fact, they are Caucasian. The problem is that they're not lily white, Bob. That's, you know, you try and explain, but that's genetics, Bob. You know, that's DNA. It doesn't exist.
Oh, right, it's magic.
It.
It's magic.
Yeah, right, it's magic.
Oh,
God Almighty help us.
You know, I'm still.
I said in my last email to you, God Almighty help us.
God Almighty help us. You know, and I'm still waiting for the fundamentalist response to this half fish, half critter thing.
Isn't
that got
wonderful?
Ducked. He's got fins, but inside the fins there are articulated elbows and wrists.
Yeah. Or the beginnings of elbows. Yeah, it's a wonderful discovery. It's a beautiful, beautiful piece of science.
And somebody sent me a blog link today. I think maybe it was my friend Victor. And the blogger wrote, okay, we've identified the link between fish and mammals. Now can we identify the relationship between fundamentalists and Jesus Christ?
Yeah.
You know, so I can't wait to hear this one. I mean, there's just the insanity is rampant. You know, I honest to God, I want a cure out there for the bird flu, and I want sworn statements by all the fundies that they won't take it because it was based on evolution.
Absolutely, yeah, sure. I would love to see that sworn statement. Yeah, fat chance. Give up your stuff, and give up your pharmaceuticals.
Ha-ha. Oh yeah. Oh no Prozac for you, fundies.
Right. Ha ha ha, Bob. Listen, have a great evening.
Thank you, Fritz. Golly Moses, I enjoy our conversation.
It was great talking to you.
Take care.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye. What's that animal's name? It's oddly reminiscent of the name of that Iraqi town, Tikrit. But it looks like an alligator, but inside its flippers are wrists. Yeah, but see, that means that alligators would be able to throw a baseball if evolution was real. Jesus. Oh, my God. Well, wait a minute. Some Gators recently won a basketball tournament. Oh, stop it, Bob. You know, but it... You know, it's what Andy in the Netherlands was saying about this weird the heretical mixture of mammon and monotheism. Well, you know, if God had loved you, you'd have been born rich. No, that's Calvinism in a nutshell. If you're good enough and God loves you enough, you will be born rich. If you're poor, it's because you're bad. And this, it, I'm sorry. It just, it crawls all over me like an ugly dose of poison ivy. Did you know that there was a little known U.S. federal law tucked into the Budget Deficit Reduction Act of 2005 that says you, I'm sorry, you must have your heart attack now because your papers are not in order. Screw you, Washington! That's... Oh, I think this is the part where I start laughing maniacally for the next 5 or 10 minutes. Not... You're going to have to... If you're on public assistance... Agnes, you weren't here for this one. You were still at baseball practice, darling. If you're on public assistance... Like, you know, most of the people around here, a lot of the people around here... are very, very poor. This is West Virginia, after all. This is the nation, or this is the little state that, because it has a lot of coal in it, is treated like a third world country, just like you would, you know, a third world country. I'm redundant, but I repeat myself. And when they're desperately ill, they're going to have to come up with a birth certificate, driver's license, and proof of residency in order to get treatment under Medicaid. No, I don't just make this stuff up, honey. She just smacked herself in the head. See,
where did that come from?
The 2005 budget the 2005 Deficit Reduction Act. Proudly voted yay on by the likes of Shelley Moore Capito. Proudly voted aye on by any number of Republican members of the House of Representatives. You know, because them Mexicans is taking away all our health care. How we go... You know, again, you got to understand, the reason there's a problem with Medicaid is has not a damn thing to do with Mexicans. Or immigrants, or... No, the reason there's a problem with Medicaid is because the daggum money stopped flowing from the federal government to the states under the matching programs that have existed since the time of Lyndon Baines Johnson. Jesus H. Christ! How stupid do they think we are?
What about naturalization?
What about it, honey?
Well, I mean...
You get naturalized, your papers are in order, and now you can have some medical treatment.
Okay. Now, I don't understand this because... A human being comes into the ER and needs to be treated.
No,
I thought no one
will not
could
be treated if his papers are not in order.
They don't treat you if your papers are in order. I mean, come on.
No, I'm not. No, I mean, you know, it is what it is. If I find my little stack of papers from where I moved over here, why am I echoing?
How many of you guys out there have went to the ER to be treated, or even to your family doctor? And unless you know your family doctor very well and have seen them on a continual basis. You know, go home, take a couple of Tylenol. Of course, it's a little more serious than a couple of Tylenol.
Well, we can't give you none of that OxyContin.
No, I'm not even talking about
you'll
OxyContin.
You'll go sell that to Rush Limbaugh. We can't have that.
He doesn't
let's
buy
take
it.
Let's take a break, dear. Get some music going. Thank you. This is Head On. We're coming up on our final half hour. You want to get in on this? You... Never mind. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Putting them in a pen, and all she wants to do.
On the last Fourth Estate, we heard from Robert Fisk.
What has now become a habit of compromising on the semantics of reporting in order to avoid criticism. You know, if you call a Jewish settlement or neighborhood a colony, you'll be criticized and called potentially anti-Semitic.
And a little bit of activist history and the Red Scare.
On the line with us right now, we have Kate Fossil, biographer of Ann Braden.
You know, I got interested in Ann's life because of her being a white Southern voice against racism. And
leave it to our listeners to ring up and keep it light.
I don't either. And, you know, Bruce is concerned about the remote control for his DVD player. I mean, I'm thinking about getting rid of the remote control on my blow-up doll. I mean, you know.
What's his name?
I never kiss a tell.
FourthEstateRadio.com.
This is Bruce Birch, and if you missed my show Sunday night, here's what I got up to. A group of U.S. businessmen in the UAE said they will invite the Oprah Winfrey Show and other talk shows to the Gulf to change American public opinion, which has helped block Dubai's takeover of six U.S. ports. He's saying that they want to reach out to the average guy in the United States and explain why the UAE is important. If you want to reach out to the average guy in the United States, they need to send something, not Oprah. I mean, how many average guys do you know watch Oprah? I don't. If they want to reach out to the average guy in the United States, as much as I hate to say it, they need to send Jerry Springer and the Jerry Springer Show over there with the bald guy. You know, maybe they can do a UAE version of My Grandmother Is Also My Lover or something like that. Oh, that's just a... Join me, Bruce Birch, for All Things Reconsidered every Sunday evening, 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern, allthingsreconsidered.org.
We're air guitaring in the HeadOnRadioNetwork.com chat room. Okay, I can only take so much late 70s pop. I'm Bob Kincaid, this is Head On, and you know, we try to laugh a little bit because you got to laugh a little bit or you'll just wind up in a corner just sort of gnawing on your own elbows and crying. I'm astonished that I get up every morning and I don't know what's gonna happen with the show. Nine times out of ten, if I've got a little list made and I think, well, you know, I'm gonna do this and we'll talk about that and, you know, oh, look at this story, everything just goes completely different. Because I think I got an ego or not enough of an ego problem. I mean, I can run out there and I can rant for, you know, I can turn this show into a 3-hour filibuster. Show a Democrat with a filibuster all about. Well, never mind. I don't like to do that. Sometimes, you know, the spirit's on me and, you know, start speaking in tongues or whatever. But that's not the way. I have so much more fun when there's a great phone call on the line. And it takes me in places that, well, it's like Fritz and I were talking about young people and foreign languages. It really does. It hooks up, it hardwires the brain a little bit better. And that's what the conversation does for me of an evening. So, you know, I had no idea when I got the little piece of information inviting me to speak with John McCormick. Taylor's Law. You know, it's worth dropping an email just to send a link to your elected representative and say, we need this in this state with Taylor's Law. Because odds are, you, if you don't know them, you live near someone whose loved one has been a victim of medical negligence, which is a terribly pretty term for butchery. Pure, unmitigated butchery. And they have, those people have been through hell, and they've been through the same kind of hell that John McCormick has, where some medical review board said, well, you know, we're not really interested in what you have to say. I'm sorry, that's my smarmy, snotty voice. I apologize for it. But you get the idea. And then, you know, lo and behold, I open the email and somebody's shipped me this story from the Boston Globe. And I find out about this business of showing your documentation just to get taken care of. And then there's Agnes's email with the stupid little racist poem in it. I mean, the fact of the matter is, if there is any... Well, it goes back to something I say from time to time. Quit with the God bless America and start working a hell of a lot harder on God forgive America. Because what we pray for in this country is not the same thing that the rest of the world prays for this country. We should be praying in this country for mercy. Because by God, the rest of the world is praying for justice. And they are animals of completely different stripe, justice and mercy. If you get bored and you want to do a little bit of reading, a couple of very little known pieces by Robert Frost. They were written as readers' theater pieces. One of them is called A Mask of Reason, and the other one is called A Mask of Mercy. And Robert Frost had a lot of tragedy in his life. And these are outgrowths of that tragedy. But this is a nation, you know, we talk about equal justice under law. We don't practice it anymore. There's no equal justice for John McCormick. There's no equal justice when the doors are closed and his lawyers can't even go into the hearing room and find out what they're saying about a doctor who was on call, who was being paid to pay attention to his pager and turned the damn thing off and went grocery shopping and then went home and went to sleep while a little girl died. There's no justice in that. There's no justice in telling someone in an emergency room that their papers are not in order. You do realize that the vast majority of poor America uses hospital emergency rooms for their primary care. And they do that because they can't get into a doctor. You know, so whether it's a concussion or a heart attack or just a really nasty cut that needs to be stitched up, it's an emergency room visit. And the Emergency Room Physicians Association, or whatever they call their union, it comes out and says, you know, we're being overwhelmed. We need some help here. And the right-wing talk sleaze bags get out and blame it on Latinos? Where do these monsters want someone to go when they are in need? We're talking here about the three W's. We're talking about the weak, the weary, and the wounded. Where do these Republican beasts want sick, hurt people to go when they're sick and they're hurt and they're dying and they are in anguish? Is it a reductio ad absurdum that I say that the Republican Party wants them to crawl off an alley and die out of their sight so that they don't have to think about this? I don't think so. It's like when I was the immigration business, someone who is undocumented and in this country who gets hurt or gets killed on the job doesn't get reported, and the family doesn't get workers' compensation. And that is why the Republican Party wants them here. because it's cheap, and human lives don't matter as much as money to that criminal organization. They don't. Poor people don't. Because they're short-sighted and pig ignorant. And they figure that as long as there's another person that they can get to do the job that the previous worker was doing, no problem. No problem at all. And these are people who talk about us being a great nation or a good nation or a blessed nation or a nation that is nestled in the bosom of God. So we got people in nursing homes, people in the State Department of Mental Retardation Institutions. We got the homeless. We got the mentally ill who now will have to come up with some verification to prove that they're citizens. Said Victoria Poulos, health law attorney at the Massachusetts Law Reform Institute. Quote, it's ironic that this is happening in the state where part of the health reform plan is to make sure that everyone who's eligible for Medicaid is enrolled. So this is what we're up against. Let's go to the phones. James is calling from Oklahoma. Hey, James, you're head on.
Hello, Bob.
How are you?
Can you hear me fine?
I got you great.
I caught something on the evening news tonight I thought you might find amusing. I know it's about all you get on the nightly news anymore is the big story here in Oklahoma was some guy stepped in dog poop.
Mm-hmm.
And he was suing somebody. But I heard something on the NBC Nightly News, I think it was, that something about underground pole vaulting in Iran.
Underground pole vaulting in Iran?
Yeah, in Iran. Isn't that ridiculous?
Holy cow.
So, well, you know what? Those people go pole vaulting underground, you know what we're going to have to do next, don't you?
We're going to have a bomb that'll get to it.
We're going to have to break out the nuclear bunker busters. I could not believe it. I couldn't believe my ears. You know, I'd had a beer or two, but... You
know, well, yeah, I know, yeah.
Wasn't like I had a 30-pack of Stan or something.
I get halfway through this show, James, and I'm like, honey, can I have one, please?
Well, thank you.
Yeah, no, it's... James, is there a link to it? Did you look around for it or anything?
No, I was sitting over at my buddy's house, and we was watching the nightly so-called news, and I think Lisa Myers come on, and what we're worried about now, they say they're actually pole vaulting underground. And I thought, man, that's a threat.
Wait, are they talking about the underground architecture?
No, they said... underground pole vaulting.
Okay.
Like it's an Olympic sport or something, and I thought, damn.
James, I think you have just fired up the entire chat room because people are... You can't just let your underground Iranian pole vaulting go.
I know. We got to wipe that shit out. I don't think we need to nuclearize them or nothing, but... might pour some Diet Pepsi on them or something. Can you imagine walking in your backyard and a pole vault comes out of the ground, sticks you right up the... you know where?
I know. Oh, get God. Off. Take care, James.
But I hope somebody else saw that. It was so ridiculous. It was...
Yeah, there's stuff out there that makes you think this, you know, this just can't
I know
be real.
This world is ridiculous, but this is getting...
Yeah,
getting
great.
Serious.
Yeah, serious. I mean, yeah, this is serious medicatable crazy.
Yeah, I'm going to take to the street with my pole vault in my hand.
Oh,
try to do it above ground. That'd be the good Christian way to do it.
Well, yeah, only Satanists pole vault underground.
Okay, I'll let you go.
All right, take care, James. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, thank you, Bob.
Bye now.
Bye.
Underground pole vaulting? Help me, please. But that, no, you see, they're talking about their bunkers in Iran, and they're talking about the qualities of it, and you know, they, and it's, you know, it's the same unmitigated crap that we got before the run up to the Iraq War. Do you remember the laundry list that Colin Powell read and Cheney read and Rumsfeld read? They got 18,000 gallons of this and 92 55 gallon drums of that, and if you put the two things together, then the next thing you know, you got a mushroom cloud over London. That's where they are. That's how they think.
Oh, that was after they said that there was
it's
the fools. The mad fools.
Yeah, mad fools. That's kind of, yeah, that qualifies. Just mad, mad fools.
Well, he went a little funny in the head. You know, just a little funny. And he went and did a silly thing.
Yeah, okay, I'm on board with that. And, you know, I haven't gotten to some of the stuff I had. The Bush White House is getting a little more Nixonian every day. Now, have you followed the phone jamming scandal? It was up in New Hampshire, for God's sakes. And the Republican Party in New Hampshire, in order to keep New Hampshire Democrats from voting in 2002, they came up with a phone jamming scam, where they kept dialing Democratic headquarters so that the phones would stay busy and people who wanted like rides to the polls and stuff couldn't get through to schedule it. It was a Bush campaign operative. I mean, you know, an insider, a guy named James Tobin. He has been convicted in the case. James Tobin was defended by the Republican Party, and they paid millions in legal bills defending him. And guess what came out today? Whoopsie. Key figures in a phone jamming scheme designed to keep New Hampshire Democrats from voting in 2002... had regular contact with the White House and the Republican Party as the plan was unfolding, according to phone records introduced in the criminal trial. Bush campaign operative James Tobin carried out the plan and shut it down when it looked like he was going to get caught. He made 24 phone calls to the White House. Okay, so he made 24 phone calls. You know, I mean, you know, there are cranks out there that call the White House switchboard every day. Uh-uh. Sorry, sunshine. Doesn't quite cook out like that. 24 phone calls to the White House in a 3-day period at Election Day 2002. Let's see, the Republican Party says the contacts involved routine election business. You understand how they lie? In the Republican mindset, doing dirty tricks around Election Day is routine election business. And it's been routine election business since which Watergate figure was it that introduced the term rat F into political parlance? The planting of the Canuck letter that made Edmund Muskie break down and cry on the steps of the courthouse and destroyed his presidential ambitions. That was what the Nixon campaign called a rat F. All right? And it is the order of the day in the Republican Party. These stories are legion, but this one is particularly, it turns out, it's going to be particularly egregious. The Justice Department has secured 3 convictions in the case, but hasn't accused any White House or national Republican officials of wrongdoing, nor made any allegations suggesting party officials outside of New Hampshire were involved. The phone records of calls to the White House were exhibits in Tobin's trial, but prosecutors did not make them part of their case. Guess why? The prosecutors Those would be your assistant U.S. attorneys working for Bush appointees. This is the same Justice Department that somehow, despite all of its rhetoric about being in love with the death penalty, couldn't quite get around to arguing the death penalty for a guy who bombed abortion clinics, i.e. Eric Rudolph. And yet they want to massacre Zacharias Moussaoui, who is, you know, talking to the walls crazy. Democrats plan to ask a New Hampshire judge Tuesday to order GOP and White House officials to answer questions about the phone jamming in a civil lawsuit alleging voter fraud. There are other two plea bargains, one with a New Hampshire Republican Party official, another with the owner of a telemarketing firm involved in the scheme. This is how dirty they are. Let's go to Peter on line two. Hey, Peter, you're head on.
Hey, Bob.
How you doing?
They are dirty, filthy, evil, twisted prostitutes from hell.
Yes, they are.
I despise them, and I want to give you a little Jeb Bush report.
Oh, I can't wait for this.
The culture of death. You know, here in Florida, we have something called the Collateral Regional Council, and what they do is they represent death row appeals.
Okay.
And, the Republicans and Jeb Bush are very, very upset with them because they've had a huge success rate in getting death sentences set aside due to faulty processes and DNA and all that sort of thing. Now, rather than that being a good thing to have innocent people exonerated from the death penalty, Bush has engineered the closure of the CCRC office. And
closure?
A state office, the regional council, which represents those people.
So, you know, like it's over?
Well, it's over. What he did was he replaced it with a list of private attorneys.
Oh, well.
Who generally they have little experience in handling death row appeals. And the attorneys who signed up to be on the registry had to promise to limit their representation to 840 hours. Now, that doesn't even come close to what a death row appeal takes in terms of hours. It normally takes around 3,000 hours. And one of the Supreme Court justices where these cases are argued described the legal work of these registry lawyers as, quote, the worst lawyering I have ever seen. So the point is to provide these guys with a lawyer, but not a good lawyer.
Well, not good enough to keep them from getting killed, because we're talking about mostly brown people.
Mostly brown people, that's correct, because they didn't like the fact that
when you're a Bush, that's
their cases kicked out.
Yeah, that's fun.
Yeah, and, you know, just so typical, the culture of death. George's brother, so typical. Then today, we got another governor, the Kentucky governor. They're celebrating Diversity Day up there.
Oh, do tell.
Okay, so what he does,
here's a white feller, and here's a white feller with freckles. Boy, are we diverse.
What he did was he dropped the sexual orientation clause for state employees. Should not be discriminated against because of sexual orientation, and just dropped it back to race and ethnicity and religious differences, blah blah blah. And then he goes on to say that what he's doing is that we're just following the federal guidelines. In other words, he's taking the lead from Jeb Bush and just saying, oh well, it's a federal thing, and we're just rolling back on that. And he goes on also to say that this is an affirmative action thing, and it's going to be very difficult to recruit people according to sexual preference. But that is such BS.
He took a thing that said you can't discriminate in Kentucky state government. You can't discriminate against people based on what happens when the light goes out. He took that.
Took that out on Diversity Day.
Right. But then he turned around and said, because you see, we can't be sitting in interviews. Well, I mean, we can't ask them to wear the handkerchief in the back pocket.
Well, then, yes, and that's part of it. But the real problem is not recruiting. The real problem is people trying to hold on to their damn jobs.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. And you know, if you can fire them for, well, you know, then more the better. Well, you know, that's I got a story sitting in front of me, Peter. The Service Members Legal Defense Network has released documents obtained under the Freedom of Information Act from the Department of Defense, which confirm the military's been spying on organizations that work to repeal Don't Ask, Don't Tell.
You're kidding me. The most failed policy that's ever been.
Yeah, but it hadn't failed bad enough yet.
You know, Clinton really ticked me off with that one.
No, but seriously, the Pentagon has been spying on, collecting information on, and, you know, I mean, they admit it, on gay activists. So now, let's revisit the list real quick, Peter. We got Quakers. We got the Thomas Merton Center. We got little old ladies. We got vegans. And now gay people in the military.
Well,
that's who we're spying on.
It's the tip of the iceberg, I'm sure. They've got
But in that little ticked off list of, you know, five groups or so, that, you know, I didn't find, you know, crazy fundamentalist terrorist. You know, I'm not thinking they're in the groups.
Yeah, abortion clinic bombers.
Yeah, no, let's not spy on the weirdo abortion groups. Let's not spy on the, you know, the Aryan nation. Let's not spy on the Dominion movement. Let's not spy on the Christian Reconstructionists.
Yeah, let's not spy on the base.
Well, okay, if you must put it that way. Oh, I must.
I'm just so tired of it. You know, it's every one of these Kentucky guys, you know, they keep falling, or not just Kentucky, but Republican governors, they're falling in lockstep behind all this stuff. And I think they're going to suffer just as badly as Bush with these poll numbers. And, you know, it seems to me they'd be stepping away from Bush as quickly as possible, considering where he's fallen to. But the man is dangerous now. You can corner an animal, and he's barely higher than an animal. You corner one, and they get vicious. He's cornered.
Oh yeah, and you can see it. I mean, the slurring was out in rare form yesterday when he was trying to answer the question about the mercenaries, and he was panting like a dog. I mean, they sound like Peter Lorre.
Yeah, I cannot stand to hear him use the word decision.
Decision.
It just makes my skin crawl. Why does that braying jackass, every time he gets up, he has to use the word decision? Christ, I've got furniture, I've got the legs gnawed off my couch.
right off the Homer sectional.
Oh, my poor Homer sectional. Oh, whatever. But anyway, you know, I just had to tell you about it because, you know, it just struck me as being a really brilliant day.
Right there on Diversity Day.
Right there on Diversity.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, I can just see the Kentucky governor out there working on the manuscript of White Like Me.
Yeah, God knows how many Gannons he's got in his table.
Oh, well, we got to go, Peter.
Okay, buddy.
Bye.
Take care.
You too. Oh, I like it when we end laughing. Because there's so much to cry about. White Like Me. Oh, the show tonight was mostly produced by me. Oh, but the last hour was by far the best one. It was produced by Agnes. Brian Reznor announces. Randy Kerboy is our engineer. Ben Birch maintains the stream of this program and all the other fine programs on the Head On Radio Network.